Sox win!
Chicago Sports Conversation is now. The Beat on 720 WGN. Just a beat.
It's 3:10 on a cloud-covered Saturday in Chicago. Welcome to The Beat, 720 WGN, WGNradio.com. The guys are off today, so they bring in, what are we, the bench warmers? Or what do we call ourselves, Mr. Tynowitz?
Let's see, taxi squad is too old a term to use. I would say the reserves, the special teams.
Garbage men. I like garbage men. I always did like garbage men.
Yeah, what did they used to call the, Jeff Blum got upset 2005 when he was referred to by the great Bruce as the D players? I believe the... We could be called anything.
Listen, I'll settle for Steve Kerr if you'll be Judd Bushler.
I love Judd.
Okay.
Juddley. He's great. His wife was a great beach volleyball player, by the way, and a great volleyball player.
It's good to see you.
It's good to be seen, Sam. Always a pleasure to be with you.
Used to be in these hallways all the time, and now we get to talk a little sports, and there's so much to get to, Harry. The Americans, as we were waiting to come in and open the show, they just won their 40th gold medal. That's 109 total. The runner-up, China, has 67.
And the Americans women's basketball team dominated way more than the men's basketball team. I mean, just they were just beasts on the court, you know, buried every opponent, haven't lost in forever.
We were going to run this question through. We'd like to do like a text question theme of the day where you guys can send in your responses throughout the show and we'll get to them. And I thought this was a good idea by UHT. Which Olympic sport were you surprised that you got into, that you didn't plan on watching? And there were a couple sports. Handball, to me, I was enthralled by some handball. And then water polo, watching these people beat the hell out of each other underwater with those underwater cameras, kneeing each other in the junk. It was intense.
They were originally going to call the sport kneeing each other in the junk and then decided against it. I think water polo and rugby are two sports people have no idea how much those athletes get beat up on. I mean, you don't want to be in that sport unless you are prepared to get beat up on and to do some beating up. But water polo is an awesome, awesome sport. You know, there's like the occasional sport that I didn't even know was a sport, like trampolines. Did you know trampoline was going to be a sport?
I did not. Also, I didn't know there were so many sports, or Olympic events, rather, that were centered around guns. Like all the rifling sports, and like, the 10-meter air shooter, and like all these events
right. Based
around guns.
The Ryan Lochte goes and gets gas,
yeah,
has guns and that.
Unfortunately, that's pretty much the most important bullet point from the 2016 Olympics.
I see what you did there.
It is. It's the biggest story from the Olympics, and it didn't happen on a playing surface.
Which is sad, because Michael Phelps added to his number most medals ever, and Usain Bolt's got to be the greatest track and field star ever.
And the cockiest.
Well, he's so different than Jordan. They were saying that Usain Bolt in Jamaica is bigger than Michael Jordan is in America, but Jordan would never be blowing kisses to the fans prior to a game. He would have his game face on, his scowl. You know, Bolt had that, like, you know, hey, I love everybody. I'm going to win by so much.
Blowing kisses, waving. And then it's a close race. He grabs the baton at the same time as two other runners. And by the time his leg is over, he's out of the picture. Like, when the race ends, he's the only runner in camera view.
There was one preliminary for one of his races where as he was winning, he was looking back and talking to the guy that was like racing for second. I mean, it must be nice to be that great that you could just, you know, have that kind of confidence. There was way long ago, there was a weightlifter from Russia who used to go so over whatever the weight limit was, he would just go back to the hotel. You know, whatever they were lifting, he would lift like, 50 pounds or, 100 pounds more. And then he would just like go back to the hotel because he knew nobody was going to beat it.
There are so many good stories from these Olympics. We've got Lochte, Bolt, Phelps, the free McDonald's thing.
Oh, it's
great. The free McDonald's for any Olympic athlete or coach. The place is packed to the gills, as you would imagine. We've got a sex marathon that happened.
McDonald's?
At the Olympic Village, a pair of Brazilian roommates, let's just say they're not roommates anymore and they'll never room again, We'll tell you about that. Bears football is here. We're halfway through the preseason.
Yes.
What do you like? What don't you like?
They can still go 2-2 in the preseason. Do not worry.
And I, you know what? When we come back, I want to talk about this Cub loss last night. I was laughing so hard when they lost. And I do this sometimes with our teams in Chicago. Just have, like, fumblesome losses. If you can't laugh at how the Cubs lost that game last night, come on. It was hilarious.
Hey, I don't want to see any cracks in the foundation.
But I also watched the White Sox to laugh, too. That was comedy last night, too. The home run derby that James Shields gave up. We will talk to Brian Billick about the White Sox, the rift, the supposed rift, even though there is no rift, according to management. Kenny and Rick Hahn not on the same page. We'll talk to him about that. We'll go down to Rio and bring in Teddy Greenstein from the Chicago Tribune.
Very nice.
Adam Hoge, WGN Radio, the host of this show and our Bears Insider. And then after 6 o'clock, Brett Taylor from Bleacher Nation. 312-981-7200. Keep those texts coming in. Which Olympic sport were you surprised you got into? I'm sure that you watched something that you weren't expecting to watch. I know what we're going to talk about your favorite sport, too, a little bit later on. He's Harry. I'm Sam. We're in for the guys on the beat. 720 WGN.
Hit towards right field. On the run, Zobrist. It's over his head. Hits off the wall. They're going to send Hundley. Relay throw is way offline and goes into the dugout. And to third base goes Ryan Rayburn. And does he get to go home? He does! It's a walk-off air, and the Rockies win it.
Jack Corrigan on Rockies Radio with the audio call. Very excited for a Rockies winner.
You're very excited for a Rockies winner. Wonder why.
Here's why I laugh. I'm Sam Panionovic. He's Harry Tynowitz here on the beat, 720 WGN. The Cubs are 33 games over 500, right?
Right.
They're the best team in the game. Everybody knows that. But when they make a decision to bench their best defensive player, Jason Hayward, it ends up to bite them in the 11th inning.
Well,
because Jason Hayward probably tracks that ball down in the outfield and they win that game.
Well, I would say their best defensive player is the guy that made the bad throw. But Hayward certainly is their best defensive outfielder. And I did not laugh because that was a game that I had in the W column. As a lifelong Cub fan, you can never count it until the game is over, but I do not like any cracks in the foundations. The Cubs have an embarrassment of riches when it comes to the boys that are wearing blue on the road and pinstripes at home. They're so great, but you can just see. You can just see, you know, like the cracks in the foundation. Right now you're missing Rondon and Strope, as well as Lackey went on the DL, and I did not need to see Aroldis Chapman. You know, they snatched defeat from the jaws of victory last night.
I didn't need to see him out there for the fifth time in six games either. I mean, Joe Maddon is throwing him like it's October already. And I don't, you know, I don't like to critique managers in August because Joe is doing his thing, you know, and they're the best team in the game. And big picture, the loss doesn't mean anything. It's just a loss. But to see the all-star closer they traded for lose the game because one of their best fielders threw the ball into the dugout. Like, I haven't seen that since Little League.
What? You know, unfortunately, it happens all the time. And, you know, Javi
not to this team, though. I haven't seen this team. I mean, they're so good at not making dumb mistakes.
I think the reason why the Cubs are one of the reasons the Cubs are excelling is their defense is great. They're a very intelligent team, and they play great defense. Javi Baez, if he could play enough games at second and enough games at third, he could theoretically win two Gold Gloves. Okay, that's how good he is defensively. But, you know, you see guys in Major League Baseball make unbelievable plays, and then you see a lot of guys make plays that are, you know, like you'd see in Little League. And that, you know, that throw was way off last night.
It just reminded me of, you know, playing high school ball or playing the college ball, you know, we used to play at the fields and stuff. And, you know, those are mistakes that we would make. It was good to see them humbled a little bit. You know, because we talk about the World Series, and it's been talked about in this town since June and July. I thought it was a funny way to lose that game. You can't tell me otherwise.
I don't know if funny is the right word for it.
I laughed out loud when he sailed the ball into the dugout.
Look, your funny is my painful. Okay, to me, that just takes me back to last October.
But it's not October. It's August. It's
I know,
one
but
game against the Rockies in a ballpark that is one of the stupidest parks in sports.
It really is one of the stupidest parks. I mean, if you're betting over-under, it's a wonderful park. But it's a ballpark that really, for baseball, it's hard to gauge how good was, you know, Vinny Cassia. How good was Andrés Galarraga? Because, you know, their numbers were so inflated because they played in Colorado. And, you know, they've had a couple different stadiums out there. But look, as a lifelong Cub fan, you saw last year in October how quickly it can all go down the tubes. And I thought that getting Aroldis Chapman meant the thing that Cubs fans were most concerned about would no longer be a concern. And that is, if you had a one-run lead in late in the game or in extra innings, if Chapman came on the hill, it's over. I mean, his numbers are still ridiculous. He's something like 110 save opportunities, 102 saves. Not bad. Not bad, but I don't know how you get humor out of that, Sam.
No, the relay throw into the dugout. And did you hear the announcer?
That's the Colorado announcer. No,
if he can enjoy it, I can find a little bit of humor. That being said, though, that bullpen is starting to become an issue. I think some guys are overworked. Chapman is a little overworked. I mean, he's only throwing 98 now. What happened to 105?
He still got 100 last night.
Okay, all right, but Rondon on the shelf.
Yeah.
Strope, the knee injury on the shelf.
Yeah. Had to have surgery.
And you've got some big-time decisions to make here as we round this playoff roster into form.
And Carl Edwards Jr., who was on the hill last night when Tyron came in, he's been very good. You got to like what that youngster's been able to do. Joe Smith has not been great since they came back from the Angels. I was surprised they unloaded Joe Nathan, who went back to San Francisco. I think that, you know, you still have to worry, number one, about the bullpen if you're a Cubs fan. And then number two, you could worry, you know, I can't speak for all Cubs fans, but I personally would worry about sometimes they have an ability to not knock in runs when it's time to knock in runs. But there are so many positives, and the positives far outweigh the negatives. And you're right, when you're up 13 games, you know, a game like that, you can kind of laugh off and go back out there tonight and hope that Mike Montgomery's got good stuff. Someone's got to replace Lackey for the next few starts, so it's all good for the Cubs. It's an embarrassment of riches. But I didn't need to see, you know, that ball going high. That's a high fence in Colorado. A lot of stadiums, that's gone. That's just a two-run homer. You don't have the embarrassment of the bad throw. But bad throws happen. And I'm telling you, Javi Baez is one of the best defensive infielders out there.
Get those throws, get those plays
out of the way.
Get them out of the way now, because if you do a deep run in October, you can look back at this game and just like, hey, remember when we lost that game on an error, and the Rockies, who are one of the worst teams in the league, jumped around and gathered and piled on each other on the infield.
You know the greatest play from last night?
And Joe Maddon looked helpless.
Well, he
went out to like try and challenge it, and they were like, no, it went in the dugout. He's going to score.
Yeah, I mean, I think they looked at it. They just had to make sure. You know, it was kind of like, it was similar to the way that the men's 4x4 team last night got disqualified.
Yeah.
You know, they had to see, hey, you know, he wasn't at the yellow line yet when they handed off, so they didn't win the bronze. He was, you know, past second base, clearly, so he got to, you know, come in and score the winning run. To me, the great play, and I keep finding positives, because that's what you do if you're a Chicago sports fan, if you're a Cubs fan, you keep finding the silver lining, or in this case, the blue pinstripe lining. The Kyle Hendricks run score, when it was knotted at one, and Hendricks is on base, and he's running, turning for home, carrying the mail, if you would, and his stride carries him over home plate, so he never touches. And the catcher, Nick Hundley, no relation, swipes at him and doesn't tag him. And Jim Deshaies, right away, Deshaies says, hey, there's been no call. He wasn't tagged out. He wasn't called out. He wasn't called safe. And the Rockies dugout, they're like, you know, hey, it's 420 somewhere. They don't notice it. And Kyle Hendricks, instead of like scrambling back to home plate, instead of like darting back to the plate, he like nonchalantly goes like he's going to pick up the bat. And he's just like, oh, I'm going to go step on home plate. And as soon as he did, the umpire called safe. That was Kyle Hendricks. So many reasons to like him. And the way he went back and stepped on home plate to get the run in was great.
If there is a nugget that is above all nuggets in that game on the positive side, it is Kyle Hendricks. One run, six innings. He now has the best ERA in the game.
It's
the best
awesome.
ERA in all of baseball.
It's awesome.
When you look at this pitching staff, I'm telling you, if you have the 1-2 punch opening up at home, it's hard not to start him in that second game.
Who's there? Kyle Hendricks?
I'm starting Hendricks at home.
Oh, yeah.
With a 1.16 ERA at home, the best home pitcher in the game, you're going to start him on the road?
Boy, Jason Hamill's got, what, 22 innings straight? You know, no runs scored on him.
And yeah, but he's going to run out of potato chips, and then he'll be over with. His career will be done.
I know everybody's making such a big deal about Jason Hamill eating 4 bags of potato chips every game he pitches. I eat like 6. You know, you have to start Arrieta and Lester. That's just what
I want Lester on the road in a big game. I want him in that swing game, game 3.
You mean the guy with the greatest World Series ERA ever?
Yeah, I'll start him on the road. I'd rather have him start on the road than Hendricks.
Well, I mean, look, in a perfect world, it'd be great to have John Lester trotting out there with a 2-0 lead. But, you know, you go with Arrieta and Lester in the first 2 games. But an interesting conversation is, which starter are you not pitching in the playoffs?
312-981-7200. Plenty of Cubs conversation to come. We'll also talk a little bit of White Sox. And there was a story this week across the dial that Kenny Williams and Rick Hahn not on the same page. Now, that's far from breaking news. That seems obvious to those that know the White Sox organization. We're going to talk to Brian Billick, who writes about the White Sox and their farm system, and he's really plugged in on the South Side. He's going to join us after the news. We'll also talk to Teddy Greenstein, who's down in Rio, Adam Hoge from WGN, and Brett Taylor from Bleacher Nation. You've got the Beat, 720 WGN. It's the Beat. Sam Panionovich and Harry Tynemitz with you today from 3 until 7. I'm waiting for the Jets, the planes, for the Aaron Waters show. I haven't heard any yet today, and I'm a little upset about that. I was waiting this morning, but at 10 o'clock, the skies were pitch black downtown Chicago.
The only Jets that I want to see are Matt Forte and Brandon Marshall.
Okay. What about Vinny Testaverde?
I think of him as a Buccaneer. Wayne Corbett out of?
Penn State?
Out of Hofstra.
Oh, yeah.
Flying Dutchman.
How dare I forget that?
The Aaron Waters show, the air show, was always the best part of it for me because I went there once. I physically went there once. And I always watched it from somebody's roof or somebody's apartment, and it's really awesome. It's incredible. But the best time to watch the air show is when you're at a Cubs game or a Sox game on a Friday and the Jets are practicing. You see the Blue Angels and everybody flying by for free.
Or the first time when you live downtown and you don't realize what they're doing on a Thursday afternoon and you think it's like World War III beginning as a jet zooms by your window and you duck under the bed.
That happened to you, Sam?
That did. I didn't know they were training for the Aaron Waters show the week before. I mean, it would make too much sense. 2 + 2 = 4, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm at last. Hold on. I got a calculator on my phone.
No, that's a cell phone, Harry. That is not a calculator.
I got one on there. Technology.
We just talked a little Cubs. Let's talk a little Sox right now. This is the Northside Southside Report, sponsored by Vienna Beef. There are some headlines. The worst possible headlines out of the South Side of Chicago. The White Sox, 7 games under .500 now. Turmoil in the front office, and now questions about who exactly is running the ship. We bring in Brian Billick, who writes for Future Sox, and Brian's with us here on WGN. Happy Saturday, Brian. Thanks for joining us.
Happy Saturday, guys. Thanks for having me.
So why should I be confident long-term that there's a solution in this front office to get some winning baseball back on the South Side, Brian? Because since 2005, they hoist the trophy. Everybody was happy. They've been to the playoffs one time since. Why should White Sox fans be confident in this front office?
Well, if you want to take the owner, Jerry Reinsdorf's words from what he said the other day to David Kaplan, he called David Kaplan to make sure that he knew the White Sox front office was stable and there was no issues in the way they wanted to move forward with this organization. But really, you know, we talked the other day, Sam, and it was the funny thing you said. You were like, does everyone not know this, that the White Sox have this turmoil, that the White Sox have this difference of opinions in the way to really move forward with the team? And I mean, Hahn's starting to get some of the blame, but obviously it's a group effort from everybody in the front office, and people really want to point the finger at Hahn, but how could you hold him accountable when it seems like he doesn't have the reins of this team and Kenny Williams still has the juice to do what he pleases and acts in the way he always has?
Brian, Kenny and Ozzie were always, you know, at each other's throats, but this is like the first heavy barrage of Kenny and Rick stuff. In your opinion, how tight is their relationship? Are they adversarial?
I definitely think they are. I mean, if you ever see Rick Hahn speak, whether it's in the public or personally, I mean, the guy is a professional speaker. He's incredible when he talks. He will never say a bad word about Jerry Reinsdorf, about Kenny Williams, and why would you? I mean, those are his bosses, and he would never speak down on them. But I think it's really interesting, and it doesn't really resonate on the South side like it does on the North side. You got a guy in Ricketts, he buys the Cubs, and he wanted Theo Epstein to run that team. He wanted to bring the Northsiders a championship. And in the MLB, you can't interview an executive without permission unless you were to offer them a promotion. So what Ricketts did when Epstein was in Boston was he created a new level of hierarchy and offered Epstein the president of the baseball operations. So over on the North side, things are going well. Nobody's going, you know, why is Jed Hoyer not able to do what he wants with Theo Epstein? But over on the South side, things aren't going well, and people are calling for Kenny Williams to leave so Rick Hahn can run the team. But at the end of the day, Kenny Williams is his boss. So Kenny Williams may have relinquished that GM title, but he is still the most senior member of baseball operations, and he still has the final say.
I worry about accountability with this franchise, though, because we've seen Williams move up promotion. We've seen Hahn move up promotion. They were talking last week about, well, you know, we'll sit down and we'll have a conversation with Ventura, whose contract is up. He's had one winning season out of five, four losing seasons in a row. It doesn't seem like guys are being held accountable for building poor teams and having losing seasons. That's the feeling that I get from it.
Well, you're not alone with that feeling. I mean, I think most of the Sox fan base feels that way. And I have trouble pointing at Rick Hahn and looking at him as the one that should be held accountable when he's not able to do what he wants to do. I mean, what's the biggest move the Sox have made at a deadline since Rick Hahn's been in charge? Well, they traded Jake Peavy for Avisel Garcia and three prospects.
They got Youkilis. Didn't they get Youkilis one year? Garcia. They traded for Kevin Youkilis one year, Brian. Don't sell that one short.
Yeah, I mean, I think... That was in 2012, so Kenny Williams was still in charge at that point. But when they traded for Avisel Garcia, that was Kenny Williams who wanted Avisel Garcia. They came forward with that structure of one top 100 prospect and then three lower-level prospects to reinvigorate the farm system. And, you know, Kenny Williams basically made that trade happen after Rick Hahn did all the legwork. You know, then there was the signing of Melky Cabrera. That Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams did not see eye to eye on that. Last year, Rick Hahn wanted to trade Jeff Smarja at the deadline. Kenny Williams didn't. Jeff Smarja played for the Sox in August and September when they were competing for fourth place. I mean, at the end of the day, you can't hold a guy accountable when you're cutting his hands off at the most crucial times.
So who is responsible for not trading James Shields when he was doing the air quotes hot and before he reverted to the form he's had for the month of August?
That's an interesting one. I don't know. He did have a nice run for the Sox shortly after that historically horrific start he had with the Sox. I mean, there were some rumors out there that the Dodgers were interested in him. I certainly didn't hear anything about James Shields specifically, but I think a lot of people have kind of seen the way he's getting more and more fly balls every year. He's starting to lose a tick or two on his fastball, and this is a guy who's been—he's thrown 200 innings every single year of Obama's administration. I mean, this guy's the most durable pitcher in the league, so the miles are really starting to add up on his arm. And it looks like the Sox are going to be facing the brunt of that instead of the team that the Padres, who were paying for him. At the time, it seemed like it could make sense, but, I mean, now James Shields is pitching in the worst stretch of his career. I think, what is his ERA, approaching 8 right now? I mean, it's really scary, and they still got him for a couple more years.
He's given up 20 home runs in 69 innings, Harry.
We have to make James Shields great again.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, moving from Petco Park in San Diego to U.S. Cellular Field is
a little different.
A pretty tough switch.
He's Brian Billick, writes for Future Sox, futuresox.com, with us on 720 WGN. All right, plain and simple, give me a number. What is the percentage chance that Robin Ventura is actually managing this club next year? And don't tell me it should be higher than I don't want to hear 50. I want to hear something low.
I would say 20%. I mean, Robin Ventura, he's a guy, it's very strange. When he speaks with the media about his job and, you know, about his contract being up or about his contract status over the last 4 years, he's always talked about it, you know, like it's not, you know, I could be doing other things. He's not, like, super excited. Kind of how Derrick Rose would talk about playing basketball when he was with the Bulls. He doesn't seem like he's in love with the job. You know, I think a lot of people are going at Robin Ventura and blaming him for all the problems. But in reality, the White Sox haven't had – you know, the full roster, players 1 to 25 and then more. They haven't had that depth at the back end. I don't blame Robin Ventura. I think, you know, he's in the middle of the road. I don't put a lot of emphasis on what the managers do. They don't make that much of a difference. But it's been 4 years of subpar product, and he's probably going to be on the way out. I think they'll replace him internally with Rick Renteria, if I had to guess. But I would be pretty surprised if he's back next year.
Whoa! I would. Why wouldn't you go out and bring in like a a new vibe? Why would you just elevate Renteria?
Because that's the White Sox way. They even got to Billick already. You hear that?
Brian.
He's new to the organization. He just joined. He's a guy that had some success with a terrible Cubs roster and made that team come out with a better record than the talent that they had on the roster. But ultimately, he's a guy who speaks Spanish. He's a guy that has a lot of fire. Half the league's Spanish in the Sox. The Sox hired Ventura. I'm not saying that every manager in the league should be Spanish, but I definitely think having a bilingual manager makes a lot of sense when you play in Major League Baseball with 30-40% of the league being from Latin America.
So you're right for Future Sox, futuresox.com. Let's go there. Who are some names in the farm system that Sox fans can expect to see playing well, whether it be in September, next year, 2017? Who are some names that fans should be aware of?
Well, I'm glad you went that way, Sam, because every time I get called to go on the radio, all I do is talk about negative stuff, whether it's LaRoche and his kid or Chris Sale cutting up jerseys or them not doing anything in the trade line. The Sox 2016 draft has been probably the best in the league. I mean, there's Baseball America, ESPN are all acknowledging them. So they got Zach Collins in the first round. He's doing well, but he had a concussion, a little bit of a setback. Their second first-round pick's named Zach Birdie. He's from Downers Grove. He's going to be up shortly, probably at the start of September. He's had one rough outing and has otherwise been completely dominant through four different levels of minor leagues. And then in the even further, their second, third, and fourth round pick. The second round pick, they got this kid in Alec Hansen who plays with your brother in Great Falls. He's got a 1.4 ERA, striking out, well over one guy in an inning. And then they got a couple guys in Jameson Fisher and Alex Call who are more advanced hitters, guys who could get on base. And that was Nick Hostetler, the scouting director. He told me last year, the week he got hired, we're going to look at contact. We're going to look at guys who could get on base more so than we have in the past. And they got the two guys who are 1-2 in on base percentage in Division I baseball in Zach Collins and Jameson Fisher. So the early returns on the 2016 draft have been great for the Sox, and it's a much needed jolt that they needed in the system.
Hey, I've got a positive for you that's up on the big club. Tim Anderson's been terrific at shortstop.
Oh, definitely, yeah, and he's really outside of what the Sox have been able to convert on. I mean, they've gotten a lot of flack for drafting these raw players who are toolsy. And, could run a good 440, but can't really have the baseball skills. And Tim Anderson's a kid who wasn't even playing baseball as a junior in high school. He didn't try out for baseball. And one of his friends begged the coach to let him on the team as a junior in high school. And that's where his baseball path started. But they drafted out of him JUCO. He was a JUCO player of the year. And they still, like the White Sox do, pushed him through the system very quickly. And, we thought he was going to have some struggles coming up because he was so raw. I mean, he's just 22 years old and has very limited baseball experience, but he's shown a lot of power in the major leagues. He's been, better than anyone would expect at shortstop. So he is one of the gleaming lights in a dwindling season here.
There's nothing quite like minor league baseball. I'm still waiting to make my trip out to Great Falls, Montana, by the way. I haven't made it yet. Flights are like $800 round trip, Brian.
I love
my brother, but that's a lot of bread to go to Montana.
It's a weird league too because everybody hits there. It's a tough place to be if you're a pitcher.
Yeah, I know.
Your brother's got 7 strikeouts for every walk, and then the ball's just fine holes there. The different air pressure. It's a really tough place to pitch. So hopefully next year he'll be up in Kannapolis, and you got a better trip to make out to the Carolinas.
A little bit easier drive. I'll send you some pictures. Me and Harry will go on the road.
Yeah, when you go there, you can stay at Phil Jackson's house.
That's true,
right?
I could text Phil.
Jeff Fisher's house.
I'm not staying with Jeff Fisher, Mr. 7-9. He's Brian Billick from Future Sox on Twitter. Follow him. He's a great follow for White Sox stuff, both in the pros and in the minors, at Brian Billick _ B-I-L-E-K _. Thanks for hopping on with us, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, guys. Have a good weekend.
There goes Brian Billick from Future Sox. Yeah, Alec Hansen actually has blocked my brother in the rotation.
That doesn't seem right.
Well, there's a lot of money invested in Alec Hansen. There's a big signing bonus with a fat check for Alec Hansen. But he's on that fast track where he'll probably only be there for a couple more weeks, and then he goes up. You know how that goes with top prospects.
Sure, and the White Sox have had success getting pitchers. They get pitchers to the bigs, just about as quickly as anybody does, going back to Parquet and Sale and Rodon.
Did you just wake up this morning and try and throw Parquet in the conversation?
I love Jim Parquet. Jim Parquet is one of the most misunderstood athletes in the history of Chicago baseball.
Wait, hold, before we go to break, can you elaborate on that?
There's a, I would put him in the same breath with Steve Traxel. People confuse Southern California, you know, passive aggressiveness with being a jerk. They're not jerks. They're just guys that are from SoCal where, you know, everything is kind of laid back. But there was like and people were like very anti-Jim Parquet when he was here. And let's not forget how great Parquet was. And they never should take Parquet or Soraka out of that out of their back-to-back opening playoff games against the Mariners in 2001.
Yeah, that was the 1-2 punch in 2000.
Pair of left-handers. But Parquet came right out of UCLA and made it to the bigs, and Sale was up shortly.
Well, Rodon.
Yeah, Rodon got up shortly. And
they might have put the hex on Carson Fulmer, though. Did you see what happened to him? They set him down to AAA, and then he just got pounded.
It's okay, but he's young.
Yeah.
And so,
you hope that the psyche is still okay with a young, because you bring him up, you don't pitch him, and then you throw him into mop-up roles, and you know the bottom falls out.
Well, he'll eventually be a starter. He'll be okay, but he's had a taste of the bigs. He's seen it. You know, he's experienced it, so now he can visualize it better.
All right, I'm going to text Phil Jackson. We're going to take a quick timeout. 720 WGN. Great conversation with Brian Billick. FutureSox.com, bringing you back to the beat.
It's cool that he mentions your brother, Sam.
Adam says the same thing all the time, though. And he brought up the strikeout-to-walk ratio. It's very good. I want to say it's about 40 strikeouts to maybe like 5 walks. But Adam says singles turn into doubles there. Doubles turn into homers there.
It's like the park the Cubs are going to play in tonight, that whole league.
Well, he's pitching in Salt Lake City. He's pitching in Montana, in Idaho. And Billings, you know, he's all over in these, like, really hitter-friendly ballparks and cities and atmospheres.
And then Sox know that. They take that into consideration.
That's true.
Right.
That is true. Thank you. I'll let Adam know that you're...
Sure.
he does need an agent.
Oh, please.
Forgive yourself.
I'm happy to do that. Hey, that's what I could do. I could become an agent.
You should do that. That'd be a great idea for you.
Hell yeah. I had a buddy of mine that wanted me to become an agent in the 80s. And I'm like, sure, I could be an agent. I like sports. And then he wanted me to drive downstate and introduce myself to Danny Cox. Remember the former Cardinal starting pitcher?
I do.
And it was like a Saturday when I was going to, like, I had 3 different parties I was going to. Like,
wow, you were in.
Yeah, I'm like, hey, you know.
I don't even go to 3 parties on Saturday anymore.
Well, let me tell you, if you're an actor, if you're in theater, there are parties all the time.
Okay.
So like, hey, I'll be an agent. I'm just not going to drive downstate to see Danny Cox. And then the guy ended up being a very successful agent, rep Daryl Strawberry, among other people, so. But, you know, we all take our paths for different reasons.
So the one sport in the Olympics, and this was our text question of the day. We're going to do it throughout the show. Which Olympic sport were you surprised that you got into? I couldn't get enough handball. Even though the American team was awful and they're going to actually hold a countrywide open tryout next year for the handball team, I might go. I feel like I can play handball for USA.
So wait, countrywide. So it's kind of like that story about the kid that tried out for the Eagles, that movie
Vince
Invincible.
Papali?
Yeah, Vince Papale. That
sure.
was an open, you know, tryout, and he made the Eagles off of that tryout. So the Olympics are going to hold an open tryout for handball?
Because they were so embarrassed with the level of play. Well, who plays handball in America?
And it's not hand. For those of you that think of handball like, you know, using your hand and slapping it off the wall like racquetball, that's not what it is.
No, it's like soccer and hockey, only you're like throwing the ball. You're whipping it at the net with your whichever arm you throw with.
And other countries have just been doing it longer
than
America.
They've been playing it like religiously.
Right.
Because they can't afford to play hockey. They can't afford equipment. They don't have travel baseball. In Cambodia, you know, it just doesn't, you know, they got to find ways to, you know, to get interactive and get athletic in other ways. What is your favorite? I know you were talking about the volleyball.
Well, evening
volleyball.
The women's beach volleyball was spectacular. And Kerry Walsh Jennings is, you know, one of the Misty May and Kerry Walsh.
When they were in their primes, they won gold all the time.
They never lost. They literally lost one set in their whole career. So you know, in Walsh Jennings this year lost her second set, and then in one night, when they were up for the win and you get to play in the gold, when they were in that match, she lost as many sets that night as she had her entire Olympic career. And I don't want to be like, you know, these women are tremendous athletes, but, you know, hey, they don't look bad either. And so I enjoyed watching that. But the sport that I was surprised how much I got into, and it wasn't even an American team, but I found myself watching, and there's been several sports that I've enjoyed, but yesterday, the gold medal game for women's field hockey was awesome. It was spectacular. It was the Netherlands, who are the best team in the world, and they were the defending gold medal champion, playing against the British. And the British team was getting their ass kicked, but their goalie kept them in the game. And their goalie kept making phenomenal save after phenomenal save, and the game went into a shootout, and they have... This is a sport, field hockey, where, you know, I went to New Trier, and the women, the girls that played it, they were athletes, okay? I mean, they were whether they were attractive or not attractive, they were athletes. If you play women's field hockey, you are tough as hell, just like a hockey player. And this one girl got cut across her head, and she stayed in the game. She got stitches, came right back in the game.
A true pro.
But I never knew this rule, that in the shootout and overtime, the goalies cannot freeze the ball. It stays alive. So you have 8 seconds in the shootout from the time that they whistle you to go ahead and shoot.
You can keep jamming at it if you have to.
Right. You could theoretically get 7 rebounds and take 7 shots on goal besides your initial shot if the rebounds were to
come
to you.
So ideally, the goalie should just whack it as far away as possible.
Exactly. But they had a situation yesterday where the Great Britain goalie made a save, and it was between her legs, and she couldn't freeze it. She couldn't legally close, you know, her legs and just freeze it, because that would have been, you know, a penalty, and the girl would have gotten a much closer shot. But I thought that the women's field hockey was great. It was as close as I can get to ice hockey in the Summer Olympics.
Well, you've got that coming up in the World Cup. There's only going to be 11 Blackhawks going to play in the World Cup.
Seems small.
So much for that short summer. Yeah, mm-hmm. Let's load up. We're going to talk a little bit more Olympics next. Did you enjoy the way NBC did it? Did you like Bob Costas? Did you like Dan Patrick, Al Michaels, Ryan Seacrest? There's a lot of stories coming out of Rio. Guns involved, sex involved, McDonald's involved. Rio 2016, 720 WGN.
We lose!
Chicago Sports, spoken here. The Beat is on.
720 WGN and WGNradio.com.
Reminds me of one of my favorite guitarists, Stevie Ray Vaughan. I don't know if that's him. Sounds very Stevie Ray Vaughan-ish. Coming back to the Beat, 720 WGN. Sam Panionovich and Harry Tynowitz with you for 3 more hours of fun. That's what I've been told to say.
Really? Well, then you should say it. You should say it. I had a friend that saw Stevie Ray Vaughan the night, like his last performance.
At Alpine.
Yeah, and then the same friend saw The Dead right before Jerry Garcia passed.
Stevie was playing at Alpine, and they were flying him back in to play a late show at Buddy Guy's with Buddy. And it never materialized, obviously. And I think 1990 or 1991, it's been 25-plus.
Long time.
Certainly a long time. The Olympics, the final day of full competition today, closing ceremonies tomorrow. They announced that Simone Biles will carry the American
flag.
Very
deserving. Good call.
5 medals, 4 golds. The Americans running away with another Olympics. They're going to overpass the mark in London, the gold medal mark, and we should be proud of that. But I thought some of the tape delay stuff, especially the opening ceremony, that the fact that that wasn't live, that kind of threw me off right away. And then we're getting all these scores because the games are over, but NBC is broadcasting them 4 hours, 5 hours later. In an age where I can watch what I want on my phone, on my laptop, in the studio, wherever I'm at, I can watch it, yet I still have to wait 3 hours to watch it. That's not very of the times.
It doesn't make sense because, as you point out, Rio's only 2 hours ahead of us. It's not like they're 12 hours ahead of us and we have no choice but to watch them on tape delay. Well, tape delay, please. But
the 1980 Olympic game.
Right.
Lake Placid, tape delay.
Some sportscaster in Detroit spoiled
it
for everybody.
How long was the delay for that? I don't mean to change gears, but the U.S. and the Russian, Soviet Union, rather?
Yeah, well, the game was played in the afternoon, and it wasn't shown until the evening.
Right, but there was no Twitter.
No, there was no Twitter. There was no Bleacher Report.
You couldn't find out.
Right, there was no WGN Radio. You know, you didn't get all these, breaking news stories.
But I was getting stories and scores from the Olympic events that happened, but we wouldn't see them until 3 hours, 4 hours later.
It's so aggravating. An event will be coming on, and I'll pause it, and I'll run into the fridge to get something. And in the 2 minutes it takes me to go get a Snapple, I'll get the, alert that somebody won. I'm like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
They watch this in 2 minutes.
Missed it.
But there's NBC should have a better way of giving you the live stuff. And they've got, so many different outlets for it. There's, eight different channels that they're showing stuff
right.
on.
Right. NBC, CNBC, NBC Sports Network. They were doing the NBC online stream. The Serbians are playing the Croatians in water polo. That is a... That's very interesting. There's a lot of historical implications
there. Yes, there is.
Yeah, just ask Vlade Divac or Drazen Petrovic.
Right, still brothers.
Yeah.
One of the great 30 for 30s.
That was a really good 30 for 30.
It was on Bravo. They're showing the Olympics on Bravo. It's like all of a sudden, like Law and Order and the Olympics are on the same channel.
One of my favorite moments was when Bob Costas was interviewing Katie Ledecky. She had just won the gold medal when she was 11 seconds in front of the silver medal winner.
Yeah.
And when the camera was panning toward the far wall, you could only see Ledecky. So that next night, Costas is interviewing Katie Ledecky. And at the end of the interview, he's playing back her standing on the podium. And the anthem is playing, and she's holding back tears, and she's very emotional. It's a great moment. And Costas steps on the end of the clip and says, "That should be the last moment of tonight, but I'm obliged to tell you that Ryan Seacrest is coming up next." Like, total knife
slam
in the side. Yeah.
What a teammate.
Yeah. I'm obliged to tell you that Ryan Seacrest is coming up next.
Maybe Seacrest should have Costas on, because like David Faraday has Costas coming up on his show next week. So Costas had a whole long interview with Faraday, and they showed a clip of Faraday with Costas.
Second favorite moment, Costas standing with, I think it was four American gymnasts.
Uh-huh.
And he was taller than all of them, which I think for Costas in a picture of five people is a first. He was really, I think he might actually have been standing on his tiptoes.
Okay, Costas is great. Costas does such a good job as a host of letting the event be the story. And there are other people that are put in that position and don't do it. For example, when Bob Costas does the Kentucky Derby, he realizes that horse racing is not his forte. So he'll say, "Hey, here we are live, in Louisville at Churchill Down. This is the Kentucky Derby. There's 23-year-olds headed a mile and a quarter." And then he lets Tom Hammond, he lets all these other people, Randy Moss, not the football player, but the horse racing guy, Jerry Bailey, the jockey, he lets everybody else do it. Like Chris Berman, when he, tramples into an event, like the Hockey Tonight crew, when the NHL was on ESPN, Berman would take over.
Like the home run derby.
Oh, the home run derby.
Back. Look out, Sheboygan.
Yeah, and then he always does that. He picks some, town that's like 50 miles away or 80 miles away.
It's overplayed by the third batter.
Oh, that one's in Fort Collins. So Costas,
way back.
So I give Costas credit.
He doesn't make it about him.
Right.
He's one of the most journalistic announcers that we have.
And he is funny.
And Al Michaels is there, too.
Oh, Al Michaels is great.
Al is a play-by-play man I prefer. He's my favorite play-by-play man. Costas was good at play-by-play. Remember, he used to do NBA and NBC, but they moved him into the studio.
The greatest game that Bob Costas ever called play-by-play for was the Rhino game.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
I think there were three people that called play-by-play for that game. Costas, George Hoffman, and there's
George.
George did it for some sports line, and somebody else. There were three announcers that called the Rhino game.
Oh, that's cool.
Who did they play?
They played the Cardinals.
So it would
Jack
have been
Buck?
Jack Buck. So it was...
It was a Saturday afternoon game, so I don't know if Jack, I don't know if he was on or not working. I know that for Hank Aaron's 715th, that Milo Hamilton, the former Cubs announcer, was one of the few people that called that game. But Costas is great. He's more entertaining when he has pink eye. And you wouldn't wish pink eye on anybody, but it's simply, and Dan's agreeing with me, producer, it's simply more entertaining when Costas had the pink eye because, you could just see how much it was bothering him.
And there's nothing you can do.
Right, and it didn't mean you were bad. It didn't mean like, oh, Costas went out last night and got pink eye.
You got a dirty pillow.
Right, that's all. Sam, you make that sound so wrong.
I know. 312-981-7200. We've been taking texts and phone calls about your favorite Olympic moments. Vern has a favorite Olympic moment from today. Hello, Vern. You're on WGN.
Hey, Van. Hey, how's it going? Is this Sam? Sam,
yeah.
Pan.
Yeah, you're close. You're close.
Sam, you're Sam, right?
Yeah, yep, Sam and Harry.
Panasonic?
Panasonic, Panatopoulos. You should hear telemarketers call the house. Go on, Vern.
All right, so I was watching the women's basketball game today. I was just really kind of blown away with how fun it was to watch. I got to say, I kind of prefer it over the men's game. What do you think, Sam?
The women, Harry and I were talking about this. They were beating the doors off of other teams. The women's games have been more blowouts than the men's games. So in terms of dominance, red, white, and blue, stars and stripes, I think it was more entertaining to watch the women because they were just dominating these teams.
And there's a part of me, Vern, there's a part of me that doesn't want a blowout, even though it's our country and our team. You know, I'd rather see like a close game than see a 31-point victory like the USA women had today.
Well, so would I. It's just, I can see why people don't like it, but I love watching blowouts. It's so much fun.
But basketball is, you know, one of the four big sports, you know. Was there any more of an obscure sport that caught your eye in the last couple
of
weeks?
Were you watching equestrian? Were you watching archery?
No, I was watching handball the whole time, just with their hands all over the balls, throwing them in the net. It was great.
That's the nature of handball.
And Vern has a pet American Eagle, too, at home, I believe. Thanks for calling in, Vern.
Hey, Sam, I just want you to know you're terrific.
I don't know who this is, but I promise I did not pay him to call.
I agree with him, though. That's solid. There have been some moments from these games. The American cyclist who won and then went over to her son and shared the medal with him. That was pretty cool. And there's a gymnast who I believe is 37 and has a 16-year-old kid or 15-year-old kid competing against 16-year-olds. That's pretty cool when, like, normally you're giving kids that age rides, and then at the Olympics you're, like, competing against them.
I think it was the U.S. women's volleyball team. They won the gold again yesterday. They put all their medals around the coach
at
the end.
Oh, that's cool.
So you had all the players get the medals, and then they put them around the coach. So that was cool as well. We'll continue the Olympic talk. Sam and Harry in for the guys on the beat, 720 WGN. It's 422, looking outside, Michigan Avenue. Tribune Tower, Showcase Studio, Sam Panionovich, Harry Tynowitz. Sounds kind of like a law firm. We need a third name, though.
It's a lot of syllables.
There are quite a bit. A lot of vowels in there as well, as we were just talking some Olympics. I have a correction to make on my end. The sport with the medals going around the coach, it was water polo, not volleyball. So I stand corrected on that. I get mixed up with all these different
events. Sure.
It happens. You know, there's what, 40 events?
Oh, at least 40.
Well, 40 stables. I mean, swimming is a stable, and then you have 15 different events under the swimming umbrella.
Yes.
Which is why Michael Phelps has more medals than Usain Bolt.
Because right, Bolt
there are more events.
Right, Bolt has three events.
But Bolt is more exciting to me. Because Bolt, like, if you put a piece of cheese in the microwave, Bolt would get to the finish line before the cheese melted. You know what I'm saying? Like, it takes him 10 seconds to run 100 meters.
Bolt is so quick that if he turned off the light, he would be in bed before it got dark.
Is that a Cool Papa Bell?
Was like Ralph Garr. Ralph the Roadrunner Garr. Remember him? White Sox?
The Roadrunner is a great nickname.
It's a great nickname for a leadoff hitter.
Yeah.
Ralph the Roadrunner Garr. Girl number 48 with the White Sox.
Rock Reigns, another good leadoff nickname.
Rock Reigns, Mike. Well, yeah, but I mean, Roadrunner, you want it lead off. Do you want a Rock leading off? You want a Roadrunner leading off. Rock Reigns has a shot. I'm not saying he will, but he's got a shot at getting in the Hall of Fame next year.
He should be in.
It's
the second
close.
Most steals of all time. He's up there in runs and hits.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's got a legitimate shot to get into the Hall of Fame next year, which would be exciting for Sox fans.
So the Ryan Lochte thing, I don't know how much time we have to spend on this. I think we know in general he shouldn't have been relieving himself on the side of a gas station, shouldn't have torn down a sign. I guess, you know, and he would say sorry for partying because I don't think he's all there. There's a couple pins loose there. But when I read the latest report from Pat Forty at Yahoo Sports that the two Brazilian security guards pulled out guns and pointed them at Lochte, and he still wouldn't stop talking smack and still wanted a piece of them with a loaded gun pointed at him, I thought, well, you know, at that point, you know what you're getting into.
And if you're a swimmer, you know, Ryan Lochte is now going to be representing you and your sport. People are going to think, oh, swimmers are stupid, or swimmers are selfish, swimmers are bad because of Ryan Lochte. And now there's people out there saying, well, so he did have a gun pointed at his head, so he wasn't lying. But there's a difference between being robbed at gunpoint and having...
being controlled
right,
by guns.
Right.
Being put back into the box.
But I mean, Ryan Lochte is, to me, he comes off as a dirty gringo. And he has put his teammates and his friends in a horrible position where they had to lie for him. And the last guy who got out yesterday had to pay at least $11,000.
To charity, though, right?
To charity.
Charity.
He's down for $11,000 to get his passport, but who knows what was slipped under the table.
The other part, and that's a great point by you, you probably have to, you know, everybody gets 100,
oh,
you know, you
yeah.
get 100, and you get 100, and you get 100.
Yeah, it's like Oprah. And you get 100. And you get 100.
I did have to laugh, though, and we talked about this in Crosstalk with Matt Bubala about how there was a new leg to the story every day. There was a new development.
Sure.
And how fast did the media jump to the defense of the Brazilian police, who obviously are under a lot of criticism for what's going on in Brazil in general? And there was this worry that athletes wouldn't be protected. So there's already a lot of heat under them. They want to try and keep their P's and Q's in order. And I think they got a little bit too much benefit of the doubt. I don't know if I believe the Brazilian police. I'm not quick to jump to their defense. I don't know that we will ever know the full story.
Well, I certainly know I don't know the full story now. You know, it's hard to sit here and go into detail on it when we don't have all the details. So, you know, we'll eventually get more of it. But we, you know, all we have so far is what's been made available. And it is not good for Ryan Lochte.
And some of these new developments include the Brazilian police possibly getting rid of videotape. That's the latest accusation from one of the swimmers. So it's one of those stories that you'll remember, unfortunately. That's one of the top...
See, I want to remember the good stories.
But you will remember this.
Well, this, sadly...
And that stupid haircut that Ryan Lochte had.
And the hair color. By the way, Ryan Gosling should play him in the movie.
No, he's not ripped enough.
He can rip. He can go get ripped. Well, American Sniper, you see what Bradley Cooper did? I mean, you know, people probably said, well, Bradley Cooper, you know, he's not ripped. He can't be that guy. But then he went and got ripped. Ryan Gosling can go get ripped. But, I mean, I think that'd be a good choice to play Ryan Gosling. And, like, as an actor, he wouldn't have to worry about, like, adjusting to a new first name. he could just keep it. But did you see the American woman who won the shot put?
No, I didn't see her.
Okay. Her dad in the 80s won silver. In the shot put.
Oh, I did. She's from California,
and
right? She went to Stanford, I think.
She won gold, and she's, you know, heavy. I mean, like she looks like she, the last thing you'd say is she's an Olympic athlete. But she is so strong. She could pick up a bus with one hand. But she was so cool. And they interviewed her afterwards. She said, I'm just delighted that my dad could be here, and he's meant so much to me, and he's my inspiration.
And he won the silver in 84 in Los Angeles.
And he's like, she's like, hey, Dad, I beat you. So that's... good attitude. So I'll prefer to think of stories like that shot putter instead of the Ryan Lochte stuff.
Gia. That's how he says it, right?
Yeah.
Trademark that. Gea. 720 WGN. Thank you, Bob. Back to the beat. 720 WGN. Sam Panionovich. Harry Tynewitz filling in for the guys today. We're here until 7 o'clock. First 90 minutes have flown by, so let's. Why don't we just do another half hour, and then we'll be halfway home, and then we'll go until 7. You okay with that? Did you sign up for 4 hours?
I did sign up for 4 hours. I'm delighted to be here, happy to be in the studio. I think one of the last times I was in here, I got my back waxed here, and it was not a good sight.
That sounds like a personal problem.
It was a personal
problem. Why did
you
do that? That sounds... I get it could be funny on the surface, and it sounds like it would make for maybe great radio, I guess.
It was not good, and I'm sure that there exists... I'm sure there exists a video, which I hope there doesn't, because I've dropped weight since then, but I got this, like, a long time ago, and... It was ugly. There was a football pool here, and you can't bet.
Oh,
you
that's
know,
right.
You can't bet cash. So it was like instead of rewarding, I think like if you won, you got a free lunch. But if you came in last, you had something terrible happen.
I remember when I had found out about the football pool. I wasn't in it at the time, and Mark Carmen, I think, finished in last like the first 3 weeks.
Yes,
he called me before week four. It was like a Thursday afternoon. He said, "Hey, give me your picks." and he went 12-4.
He was smart enough to know.
I remember the pool. Now I remember why it happened, because I think the last week it was like ultimatum week, right?
Yeah.
It was like one of the last weeks of the season, and the stakes kept getting higher and higher. And I think you lost the last week.
I think Dave Ennett had to dress as Little Red Riding Hood one day.
Yeah, that was around Halloween.
You don't think of Dave Ennett and Little Red Riding Hood in the same sentence.
No, not at all. That's Mr. Cat. That's not Little Red Riding Hood.
Yeah, that's exactly what that is.
But yeah, Carmen didn't tell anybody. He told everybody that he made the picks.
Yeah, which isn't good. And he had to do something at the bridge.
Oh, he had to jump over the Michigan Avenue Bridge into the water. Oh, no, he like threw his shirt off. It wasn't even like...
No, it wasn't like, yeah, it wasn't him jumping.
He should have went in. He should have taken the plunge.
Well, people saw him with his shirt off and they thought about that.
So, I want to get back into the Cubs here because, you know, you're a very Cubs-centric person. And I'm trying to figure out, there's a couple questions I have. First of all, who's the MVP of the team?
It's a very good question.
The second question is who's the MVP of the league? Because I think you could have two different answers for both of those questions. You could have Chris Bryant win the NL MVP because he has better numbers, but I still think Anthony Rizzo is more important to the team.
Hey, well, that's like the Blackhawks. You know, you have one guy that you could say is the MVP of the team, one guy that's the MVP of the league, and another guy who's the most important guy on
Ooh.
The team.
Ooh.
You know, you could make a case... You know, you could do that with the Blackhawks and Patrick Kane, very deserving to be, you know, the MVP of the league and the team last year. You know, for me, even though Bryant's got more homers, I've got Anthony Rizzo as the MVP. And the reason why is because he leads his team in so many ways. And we saw him last year. He had the tarp catch where he jumped up on the tarp to catch a foul ball against the Brewers. This year, it was a higher degree of difficulty. He'd jump up on the wall.
With cleats on.
And, I mean, if I had springs on, I couldn't jump on the wall. He jumped up on the wall, and then to lean, I mean, it's like a balance beam.
He didn't
balance...
even really jump. He kind of, like, stepped, right?
He's athletic enough.
Right, right. And it's more impressive that he almost just, like, stepped up.
He's such an intelligent player. Anthony Rizzo is such an intelligent player. And, you know, Todd Frazier's a very intelligent player. I just appreciate that when guys play like that. And Anthony Rizzo, not only did he get up there, but then to keep his balance and lean in and catch the foul ball and then come down without, you know, it's like somebody called it, hey, you can't touch the tarp. To come down and, you know, and not lose the ball was great. But Rizzo is, you know, has got, I mean, if you look at the stats, they're very close. Bryant's got, I believe, 5 more home runs, but the stats are very close. Bryant's got a lot more runs scored. Rizzo has more RBI. But Anthony Rizzo to me is the MVP because he is a better defender. And he saves a lot of errors. There are a lot of balls that are going to go past the first baseman, but Anthony Rizzo stabs him. And I just think that he doesn't get enough credit for hitting behind Bryant. People don't want to face, you know, aren't in a hurry to get to Anthony Rizzo. So Chris Bryant sees a lot of good pitches. You know, and Zobrist is an awesome hitter, too. Zobrist probably gets more out of his at-bats than any other Cub. But I personally, of the Brizzo duo,
right.
I would go Rizzo.
And Madden said maybe they can both win it, which, of course, that would not happen. You don't split the MVP award. But, I mean, I just look at...
Where do you go?
I go Rizzo, and I've been on this pretty much all season long because of the guys that have been there through all the trials and tribulations. There are two Cubs that came up when they won 100 games. That were on the team, I should say. Rizzo, can you name the other one?
The other one is Travis Wood.
Travis Wood, who I don't think has a left arm anymore because
he throws a lot, doesn't
he? He's on pace for about 70 appearances. He's the James Russell of the
James Russell
of the 2016 team.
Yes, Kelly Wunsch.
Yeah, just go out there. Can you feel your arm? Nope. Just go on out there anyways.
Travis Wood is the longest tenured Cub.
He is traded for Sean Marshall.
Yeah, to the Reds.
So yeah, that in fact. The Zdrizny last night, I think, was the first Cub pitcher this season that was drafted by the Cubs.
Yeah, by this regime.
By this, I think, by the Cubs in general. I don't think there's anybody on that pitching staff that's thrown in a pitch this year for the Cubs that was drafted by the Cubs. You look at the rotation, none of those guys.
No, right.
None of the bullpen guys. Rondon, Rule 5.
Right.
Chapman, Strope from Baltimore, Wood, Joe Smith.
That's a good point by you. You know, I thought Strzelecki pitched very well. He had a couple base runners on. You know, you don't see a lot of games where two guys make their big league debut, you know, back-to-back innings, and the Cubs did that last night. The bullpen has been what scares most Cubs fans, I think, all year, and you thought when Chapman arrived, you didn't have to worry about the bullpen because now Strope and Rondon could get the 7th and 8th instead of the 8th and the 9th. But right now they're both hurt. And, you know, Strope even had to have surgery. And Chapman last night, what he did, what you found to be somewhat humorous, I found to be scary because I want Aroldis Chapman to be like, you know, game over. When he goes out there, it's like checkmate. And checkmate was not the case last night.
Well, that'll happen over the course of a season. You're elite starters will look human. Your lockdown closers will get hit.
Right, but he gets hit. I mean, again, the stats like 102 out of his last 110 he's saved. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Yeah,
that's,
but to expect him to do it every single time.
Well, he's not going
to
do it every single time, but like David Robertson, you know, I mean, he's probably blown as many saves as, you know, Chapman has, and he's, you know, encountered 70 less games.
Right. Well, back to the initial conversation, Rizzo and Bryant. I go with Rizzo because of how much he suffered through the bad. And he might not have better numbers than Bryant at the end of the year, but if you take Rizzo out of that lineup, you lose a leader defensively, offensively. He's the leader of the clubhouse. The players just gush over his mentality and his mindset and his ability to just lead by example and come in and take every day like it's his last day. And even Joe Maddon said, you know, that's an MVP player right there. So I would give more of a nod to Rizzo this year, even though Bryant might have a better statistical year.
I mean, the fact that Rizzo was here when they were awful says a lot about his character. I don't know if that's why you could give him the MVP. Like, oh, man, he was with all those teams that sucked. But I think he's the
core piece of this regime.
He is, right. And you know, and Jed's had him three times now. Had him with the Red Sox, had him with San Diego, and now he's got him with the Cubs. So they knew what he was, and they went out and got him. And now there's so many good young players. And it's just, you know, it's a delight to watch all these young Cubs. It's so easy to get behind these young Cubs, whether it's Addison Russell or, you know, my favorite Javi Baez or Wilson Contreras. Imagine if they had put three L's in his first name instead of only two.
Ill Will is what the kids are calling him.
Ill Will is sweet. He is so great at being able to keep balls in front of him. And, you know, another reason people might say Chris Bryant should win the MVP is because his flexibility. He can play left. He can play third. He can play right. You know, I think eventually if you have, you know, Zobrist long-term, Addison Russell long-term, and Javi Baez long-term, Chris Bryant needs to move to the outfield.
Well, I define long-term for Ben Zobrist, who's 35 years old.
Well, what did he sign? A five-year deal when he
came
over?
I think it's four and $14 million a year.
So I'm saying that I would have him in the lineup every day, and I would have Javi Baez in the lineup every day, which now is going to put Chris Bryant in the outfield.
I don't want to put Bryant in the outfield now. Let's not do that again because it backfired last year. If you're going to give him an entire offseason to work on it.
It backfired with Kyle Schwarber.
Right. So I see that's the one part about Maddon that I think in the playoffs needs to tighten up where you can just move guys around like that, because the Schwarber thing in left field was bad.
It's funny because Schwarber actually made some good plays out there last year, but in the playoffs it was like the spotlight, the rest of the nation sat there and said, why were they playing that guy in left? Like, it wasn't that obvious. You know, it wasn't that evident that Kyle Schwarber was going to cost you ball games in left field, because Kyle Schwarber had done a pretty good damn good job in left field for most of the season. But boy, you know, that ball will find you. And it found Schwarber at the absolute worst time. Soler has been terrific since he came back. He has been pounding the baseball. Had a 450-foot homer the other night.
And that was a guy that people were talking about trading.
Right.
May. Because you had to trade him to make room for Almora, or, you know, or move Bryant to left or right, you've got to move Soler. Now, maybe you like Soler hitting fifth or sixth in the playoffs. It's funny how things change over the course of a couple of weeks, right?
Yeah, and we as fans, you know, we get to, like, you know, say, oh, I'm changing my mind from where it was yesterday. But, like, managers can't do that.
No.
Joe, even in benching Jason Hayward, Joe Maddon goes out of his way to state he'll be back in the lineup when we get to San Diego. Come Monday, good Buffett song, come Monday, he will be starting in right field. But he's getting this weekend off because there's a lefty starting Friday, there's a lefty starting Sunday, and Jason Hayward hasn't been hitting. He's at a career low 225. He's never hit 225 in a season.
Yeah, 227, I think, when he was 21.
That's nuts. Jason Hayward's been a terrific hitter. And he you know, homered against the Cubs in the playoffs last year when he was on the Redbirds. But, you know, if I'm the Cubs, I'm finding a way to play Javi Baez every day. And Javi Baez is obviously going to play in the infield. So you got Russell at short, and you got Zobrist at second. So I'm playing Chris Bryant in left. And if you want to, you know, have Soler in there, you could have Soler in right. You know, you could mix and match. But, you know, right now, even though Hayward has a huge deal, and I believe an 8-year deal for Jason Hayward, I'm still playing Javi Baez every day. He is just such a fantastic player.
Whether we like it or not, lineup roulette is going to continue. Joe's going to do it. He's going to play Javi Baez against lefties, the occasional righty. It's going to drive you nuts. But I'll tell you what, he probably will use him late in games. Say Zobrist bats in the seventh, makes the last out of the seventh. You know Baez will go into the field late.
Yeah.
Like a defensive replacement.
Right. And Zobrist can also go play corner outfield for you. You know, Sam, I'm the most optimistic Cubs fan in the world, but like these people saying that they're going to be in the World Series for sure drives me nuts. It drives me batty. But I do think it's fun to talk about like a playoff roster. They have a magic number. The Cubs' magic number is 30. They have a magic. We're in August, and they have a magic number. That's great. So you can have questions like, if you were making a playoff roster today, would you include Miguel Montero?
I was going to say let's. Eliminate somebody from the playoff roster. We'll do that next. 720 WGN. Sam and Harry filling in today on the beat. 720 WGN inside the Allstate Showcase studio. And you just waxed Miguel Montero from the playoff roster.
He gone.
You just cut him.
I cut him. You know, he's I believe he's third in the league in pitcher ERA. But he doesn't throw guys out, and he's not hitting. And you have in Wilson Contreras a phenomenal talent at catcher, and you have in David Ross a veteran that you can depend on who throws guys out. Wilson Contreras, did you like Wilson Contreras picking the guy off first last night?
You know what I thought when he made that throw to first base, though? I'm picturing him. You talk about last season, the spotlight, and the big plays finding you. I have this vision of him throwing the ball down to third base in a tie game late, and it goes in the left field. Why do I have that vision?
Because you've seen the Cubs play before. This is a new breed of Cubs.
He's a little loose behind the plate with that. It's a strong arm. It's a great arm. It's an accurate arm.
Hey. It's the year of the Cub. Wilson Contreras, just because Schwarber had trouble with fly balls last year in the outfield doesn't mean that Wilson Contreras is going to have trouble throwing guys
out. But when
out.
He does, I will text you.
Okay, you do that.
Okay.
Vote for together. You're still going to text me?
Yes.
Okay, that's good. Wilson Contreras is a phenomenal catcher who could also play left. And David Ross is the guy that the players love. He's like another manager on the field, and he hit his eighth homer the other night. David Ross, who would have thought that David Ross would be, you know, more apt to hit a home run than Miguel Montero? So I like Miggy. But right now, if I'm going into the playoffs and I've only got 25 spots on my team, I can't have three catchers. And I can't have three catchers where two of them only play catcher.
Right. The flexibility for Contreras is big because he can play left. He's played right, even a little bit of first base. He was taking grounders at third a couple of months ago. Like, Joe Maddon's trying to groom him into this mega position player. I don't know about Montero, though, because if there's one thing Joe loves, it's balance. Mm-hmm. And that's a left-handed bat,
right,
that you might need late in the game, because with the La Stella thing, who knows if he cries and runs home again.
What are you going to do with La Stella?
Right, but you need a left-handed bat here. So,
right, and Hayward hasn't been giving you a left-handed bat.
Well, I
he
assume
might be
Hayward's
starting.
Going to start. Well, he's paid to start in the playoffs.
You would think he would be starting.
I'm going to go ahead and say he's going to start in the playoffs.
Okay, so you need – and Chris Coughlin, we don't know about his health. If Coughlin's healthy, then, you know, he's a pinch-hitting left-handed bat. I just don't think, you know, Miguel Montero – he has, you know, he's hitting under 200, and he doesn't throw anybody out. So he's Jake Arrieta's favorite catcher, although the no-hitter this year was thrown to David Ross. But I, you know, if I'm carefully crafting my Cubs postseason roster, I'm probably leaving 47 on the side, at least for the first series.
And then bringing up Almora, is Almora on the team?
You can make a case that Almora comes up here. Alberto Almora, there's nothing he did in the outfield that wasn't wonderful. And if they don't sign Fowler, Almora is your center fielder for years to come. But you could bring up Alberto Almora and just make yourself stronger defensively.
That's something to watch. Late in games, who can help them save runs? And I think you hit it right on the head with Baez. If he's not starting, he'll be in there in the eighth or ninth in the field somewhere. He might even pitch. He could probably pitch. He could probably throw 95 on the black if he needed to.
Right. I mean, he's like, if they had closer infielders, Javi Baez would be a closer infielder. You know, just have an infielder that comes in for the eighth or ninth.
You want to talk some Bears? Can we talk some
Bears,
football next?
Yes.
We'll talk some training camp. I'm watching a little Hard Knocks.
Oh, great show.
Jeff Fisher just rubbing me the wrong way.
Well, you're nuts.
Mr. 7-9.
Jeff Fisher's...
Mr. 8-8.
Jeff Fisher's the second most wins, right? Of all the...
How many 500 seasons has he had?
Oh, come on. Jeff Fisher's taken teams to the Super Bowl. I mean, how do you not respect guys like Jeff Fisher and Andy Reid?
I don't know.
I love Jeff Fisher.
The candle's about to burn out.
Jeff Fisher was a Super Bowl Bear.
Yeah, that's why you're still attached. 720 WGN.
Surprised you're listening to The Beat?
No, I'm not surprised at anything. I don't want to answer any questions like that.
Chicago sports spoken here. This is The Beat on 720 WGN.
Wouldn't be a Saturday summer day in Chicago without the wedding wars. Outside Michigan Avenue, people running toward the middle of Michigan Avenue through traffic to take their wedding pictures on the medians.
Right. Well, in many cases with the bridal parties.
Yeah. The whole thing. Well, sometimes you get like the whole wedding party and they go out there and not only do they like jaywalk across a busy street, but they just kind of float around them and they're like huddling around the edge of the median. As cars go flying by about 40 miles an hour.
I mean, it's not just a busy street. It's Michigan Avenue, right. For God's sake. It's Michigan Avenue. People, it's Saturday. People got stuff to do. Don't be running eight people across unless you have, like, a red light.
It stops around the end of August. This is probably the last hurrah, the last couple of weekends for wedding pictures.
People love the summer wedding.
Right. Those are in.
They say when you marry in June, you stay married forever. Wendy and I got married on College Rivalry Saturday. Michigan State, you know, it's like all the, you know the day I'm talking about.
That's the worst possible day.
It's the weekend Alabama plays Auburn, USC plays UCLA, you know.
Michigan, Ohio State.
It's just all those games. That's the weekend we get
Miami,
married.
Boston College, Texas, Oklahoma.
Miami, Boston College is only a rivalry because they're out of schools. You know, so they always play each other. But the rest are like geographical. Florida State.
Now, we'll talk Bears in a second here on The Beat, 720 WGN, but you brought up something that is going to happen to me this weekend. I love college football. I've been watching college football since I was 4 years old, and I love to have my Saturdays free. And if I don't have to go anywhere, I like to hang around and watch football. There's a situation where there's a wedding, like October, you know, third weekend in October, destination wedding.
Where's the destination?
Cincinnati. So, one, there better be...
That's an on-purpose destination?
Yeah, that's where the bride is from.
I thought you were going to tell me that, like... And, you know, nothing against Cincinnati, but I've been there. You know, so I thought you were going to tell me, like... You know, oh, they're getting married in Hawaii, or they're getting married in the Bahamas.
They're getting married at Paul Brown Stadium.
That's cool. Are yeah. you really?
Yes.
They're going to play Welcome to the Jungle? And now, for the first time anywhere, the bride and groom have their wedding dance. Welcome to the Jungle!
You know where I was? I was at the Bertucci family from...
Oh, Bobby Bertucci.
Bobby and Bruno.
Mm-hmm.
There was a Bertucci family wedding.
Was Ed Farmer with you?
Ed Farmer. I was actually at a table with Mike Vec.
Oh, that's awesome.
Sat next to Mike Vec, son of the late Bill Vec. They had the wedding reception in center field behind the fan deck.
That's cool as hell.
It was, I want to say it was October, so if it wasn't 08, the Sox weren't in it. They were done, but they put all the tables and the banquet stuff, and they had like carving stations, and they had the wedding reception. The wedding itself, the mass was at a church in Bridgeport, but then the reception... was in center field.
That's awesome.
On the concourse. Well, it's not the concourse. I mean, essentially it is the concourse, but it's the center field, you know, area.
Yeah, yeah. That's great. I've been to two weddings at the Cell. One of them was a church wedding where the party was in that club in right field.
Stadium Club.
Stadium Club, thank you. And I'm a big fan of U.S. Cellular Field. The other thing, it wasn't actually a wedding. It was a birthday party on center field.
On the playing field.
On the playing field. I had a friend who he's can afford stuff like that. And my friend Andy Berlin had his 50th birthday on center field. It was pretty cool. The Bodines were there.
The Bodines?
Oh, yeah. The Bodines were on center field.
All of them?
Yeah, all of them were there. And Pearl Jam tonight at Wrigley Field. Are you going?
I am not going, no.
Do you know that they had an impromptu concert last night on top of Murphy's Bleacher Bar?
Doesn't surprise me. They had an impromptu concert last year. One of my friends, Big Cat, was at the actual thing. It was a house party after they beat the Cardinals.
Oh, nice.
At Wrigley. And Eddie Vedder was wearing his backward Cub helmet.
Yeah.
Playing guitar, and they were playing the Someday We'll Go All the Way. And there's video of that. So I saw that transpire via video.
So is Theo Epstein in Colorado tonight, or is he in Chicago at Wrigley?
Do you think Theo's missing Vedder at Wrigley?
I don't think so.
You are sorely mistaken.
He can be in charge of the Cubs from Wrigley. He doesn't need to go to Colorado.
I know who is not in Colorado. I know he's also a very busy man, the host of The Beat, who's off today, but he's not actually off. He's working. He's at Bears practice. Of all places, Adam Hogue joins us now on his own show. What's up, Hogue? How you doing?
Hey, guys. Harry, it's like the old days here. You ready to talk about Mark Trestman and Phil Emery? And...
Oh, God.
Do you remember, Harry, what I had to, when you, Jarrett, and Spike were at Bears practice and nobody had a recorder, so I had to hold the microphone and my recorder while you guys interviewed Trestman?
I do.
those were the days.
Those were the days.
And Adam, you've
friend.
Been lucky to cover some of the worst seasons in Bears football. Luckily, though, it's on an upswing.
Well, theoretically, yeah. I mean, I think so. I just think it's going to take some time here. I think if you watch the game the other night in New England, you saw a team that's maybe their starters are getting better. But obviously the depth is a huge issue, and that's where this kind of roster turnover that's been happening since Ryan Pace took over, it's just you can't do it overnight, and they're still in the process of doing that. So Bears fans are going to need a little bit more patience, I think, for a while, because they could have an outside shot, I think, at some meaningful December football this year. And maybe an outside shot at a wild card, but they really have to have everything go their way and have a very healthy season for that to happen.
And you mentioned depth, Adam. You know this team very, very well. It's something that scares a lot of us. They brought in Bobby Massey, and the O-line looks like it could be good. Cutler had a little more time in Game 2 than he did in Game 1. But how much faith do you have in the Bears' ability to run the football this year?
Well, I have a little bit more faith after I saw what I saw in New England than what I saw last week against Denver. That was very concerning, their opener. And And really, because these practices that we're able to watch, because it's not live tackling, you can't really tell how good they might be running the football until you get into these preseason games. So, you know, to go up against the New England Patriots the other night and have the offense have some success, the blocking I thought overall was good. When I rewatched the game, I thought the, you know, every single member of that offensive line played pretty solid. There were a couple mistakes, probably maybe one to two mistakes for each member of that offensive line, but for the most part, they were minor. And they got by with a pretty solid performance, I thought, and I felt a lot better about what I saw from Jeremy Langford, too, who it's not completely his fault because, again, you can't really tell what's happening in all these practices. But up until Thursday night, I didn't really see anything outstanding from Jeremy Langford since camp had started. So overall, I thought that was a good start for the running game at Foxborough. In Foxborough the other night.
I want to put something to rest here. I couldn't help but laugh, and you talked about this on Thursday after the game. Martellus Bennett opens up the floodgates to an ESPN The Magazine reporter about how bad of a player teammate Jay Cutler is, but he wouldn't talk to reporters in Foxborough. Am I reading that right? He wouldn't say anything there?
Yeah, he avoided us for four straight days.
That's the most Martellus Bennett thing of all time.
Yeah, the guy that couldn't shut up for 3 years in Chicago and, in many cases, used the media for certain things that he wanted to promote and things outside of football and did so well because there was always TV cameras that were willing to shoot right at him. But when he says something about his quarterback or his old quarterback and Chicago media comes to town, he refuses to talk to us. And, at first on Monday it was he'll talk on Tuesday, and then on Tuesday it was, oh, no, I'm not going to talk till after the game on Thursday. And then after the game on Thursday, he refuses to speak. So, it's a pretty weak move, I think, overall. I don't necessarily care about talking to him, but just for in terms of him to call out his quarterback and then not own up to it when the Chicago media came to town, I thought that was pretty weak.
The Black Unicorn is just now the Black Eunuch.
Yeah.
Not good. Hey, the secondary is a big concern of mine. And, I feel much better about the corners than with the safeties, but I'm not sure of Kyle Fuller's health. Do you expect Kyle Fuller to be good to go once the season opens in Houston?
What I was told the other day was that he's definitely out the preseason. And week one is the hope, but not a for sure thing. And I was also kind of told that it's similar to the J.J. Watt situation, where J.J., from the start with his injury, week one against the Bears was always going to be kind of in question. So, I think we're going to get to week one once you get to that game week. And for both of those guys, J.J. Watt and Kyle Fuller, we're going to see them on that injury report and probably – on that Friday, we're either going to find out they're questionable or doubtful. And it might come up to that red to game time. And obviously I'm projecting 3 weeks out at this point. But it's a dicey situation. And the depth at corner is questionable. There's a lot of guys we don't know. But at the same time, I don't know that Kyle Fuller was necessarily – a great player that you can't afford to lose either. He was still in very much of a prove it mode, I think, to not only the fan base, but also to this pro personnel staff that's still trying to evaluate this roster. Not to say he wouldn't have made the team. I think he was always going to make the team, and I still think he'll make the team. But this season is an important season for Kyle Fuller. So, he's going to be motivated to get out there as soon as possible. But it's also, I think, in his best interest to make sure he's healthy before he does so, because so far in camp, he hasn't been healthy. And, Ryan Pace, when we talked to him the other day, straight up said that was noticeable in his play.
Adam Hoag, Bears insider and host here at WGN Radio. You talk about health. You and I had this conversation, I think, last season when I said, well, if Kevin White doesn't play this year at all, it's almost like you have two first-round picks in 2016. They hope that's the case. They hope that White stays healthy. Obviously, you hope that Leonard Floyd stays healthy. What have you noticed in game action from Kevin White? Because we haven't seen a lot of it here in Chicago.
No, not so much in the games. I mean, he did have that one catch for a first down on a third and kind of medium third and long situation the other night. So that was positive, but then he came back and he dropped the pass, which it was a problem for him in the offseason program, not so much in training camp, but in the offseason program, we did see a number of drops, and that was something he dealt with in West Virginia too. So you don't want to see that carry over to the regular season. So hopefully he gets that out of the way with that drop the other night. Everything I've seen from Kevin White has been very, very encouraging. And I think that he's shown that he's healthy and he's back from that leg injury. He's got the speed. He's got the quickness. They're going to use him a lot in trying to give him the ball in space so that he can catch and run. And, you know, I think it's going to work out for him. I feel a lot better about Kevin White at this point than I do Leonard Floyd, the rookie out of Georgia, who, you know, I see all the measurables and the speed and everything they talk about, but I'm still waiting for that first wow moment. You know what I mean? You know, the first time where he, whether it's even in practice or a game, gets off the edge and gets to the quarterback in a snap and makes a big play. And so far, what's it been? Over 3 weeks now at this point in two preseason games, I've still yet to see that. So I'm not ready to say that's concerning, but it's certainly noticeable at this point.
Adam, the D-line, we had a Will Sutton sighting on Thursday night. You know, it was sure nice to see that, but, you know, maybe I just want to believe it, but I believe Eddie Goldman looks better, and I believe he's going to have a good year. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so, too, and I think the Bears, their actions in the offseason showed you how much they think of Eddie Goldman, because they didn't really add depth at that nose tackle position. They're all in on their second-round draft pick from last year, so I like Eddie Goldman. I think he's going to have a pretty solid year. You know, you saw some depth at that position the other night, too, which I didn't necessarily think was there. But Terry Williams, who was on the practice squad for most of last season, they call him the Swamp Monster. He shows up with a huge play, gets in the backfield quickly on that goal line stand. And then you also saw Keith Browner out there make a big play. So, you know, the defensive line has been pretty good, I think, so far in the preseason. One thing I'm looking for is, can Jonathan Bullard, that third-round pick out of Florida, earn a starting job by week one? And if not week one, at least by midseason, because he looks like he was a steal in the third round so far. I really like what I've seen from Jonathan Bullard. And while Mitch Unrein's a solid player, right now he's penciled in as one of your starters at defensive end. You know, to me, he's more of like a utility player in baseball, where you really love him when he's coming off the bench, but as soon as he's got to fill in for 3 weeks, you kind of see it, that he's got a little bit of a ceiling. So if Bullard can pass Mitch Unrein on the depth chart and be the starter, then all of a sudden you're looking at a situation where you have a very good rookie starter and solid depth behind him at Mitch Unrein.
We're, what, 3 weeks away from the first Bears game? I think three weeks from tomorrow. It might not be, you know, the most intelligent question to ask you on August 20th, but I'm going to ask it anyways. What is a realistic ceiling? What is a realistic floor for this team as far as wins?
Yeah, I think the ceiling, the absolute highest point of the ceiling is to sneak in as a wild card. I think that's asking a lot, but I'm not ready to completely rule it out right now, because I do think there are enough pieces in the starting lineup where if everything goes well and they stay healthy, it's a possibility, especially when you look at the second half of the schedule. They need to win at home for that to happen. They were 1-7 at home last season, so they got to improve on that mark, and you know they're going to be focused on doing so. Now, I mentioned the depth issue, though, when I came on with you guys, and it's a dire situation, in my opinion. So all of a sudden you have one or two or three very key injuries. You know, I'm talking Alshon Jeffrey can't get out there again. I'm talking, God forbid, Jay Cutler goes down.
Stop it. No!
I'm telling you, if those kinds of injuries hit, could we see a 4-12 football team? That might be the floor. So I see a very wide range here in possibilities, from anywhere from sneaking into the playoffs to it being a disastrous season. So they got to stay healthy. It's so imperative, because – I mean, the Patriots outgained them 299-15 in the second and third quarters the other night. So as great of a start of the game as that was, and encouraging as that was in New England, the second and third quarters really exposed some of the depth of his roster.
Well, Adam, I think we know two things about this season. That the two keys to this team are going to be whether or not J.J. Watt can play week one for the Texans and how well the offensive coordinator does when he's not the quarterback coach. What do you expect from looking at it from the Bears offensive coordinator standpoint? I know when Adam Gase goes to take over the Dolphins, you lose a little, but how much do the Bears have in their new offensive coordinator?
Yeah, you know, I think that's something we're going to be watching very closely in the first quarter of the season. You know, we get a little bit of a glimpse so far in the preseason, but you know they're not really going to open up the playbook and expose too much this time of the year. But so far I think it looks very, very similar. And I thought that one thing that Adam Gase did so well last year was protect Jay from Jay. You know, keep him in safe situations, not let him beat himself. And I think what I've seen so far in the preseason is Dow Loggins taking a very similar approach to that. But Dow Loggins is going to have two pieces that Adam Gase didn't really have last year, and that's Kevin White and Alshon Jeffrey. That allows you to go a little bit more vertical than the Bears could go when they were starting games with Mark Mariani and Josh Bellamy as their top two wide receivers last season. There are going to be more options for Dow Loggins. The question is, when he pulls the trigger and he calls those plays, what's it going to actually look like, and how is he going to do under pressure? Because that's not something that every offensive coordinator does well.
We'll read this stuff at WGNRadio.com/Bears. Adam Hogue's Bears blog. Follow him on Twitter, @AdamHogue, and you can usually hear him here on Saturdays and Sundays starting at 3 o'clock. Thanks, Adam. We appreciate your time.
Thanks, guys.
I love it when you watch games back, Adam.
Study the film.
Harry, you're the best.
Go on.
I don't know what just happened there, but I appreciate it. I appreciate everybody. 720 WGN. Well, we just talked Chicago Bears with our Bears insider Adam Hogue here on the beat, 720 WGN. Sam Panionovich and Harry Tynowitz in the chairs today. We just saw a picture of Jeremy Langford in a walking boot.
That's not good.
At Bears practice.
It's not good when your lead running back is in a walking boot.
This is after we just talked with Hogue about how important it was for them to stay healthy. And the Bears actually practicing at Warren High School in Gurnee. Jeremy Langford, Kyle Long, a lot of guys inactive for practice. They don't have to practice. They're not even wearing pads today. But it's one thing not to have pads on. It's another to be in a walking boot.
They're in Gurnee. Please, John Fox, don't take them to Great America. Someone will just get hurt there. Somebody's going to get hurt on, you know, Batman the Ride or the Eagle or the Water Ride. Just don't take them there. They're saying Zach Miller is healthy enough that he's going to be back real soon. So that's good because, you know, the tight end, even though Tony Moyaki had a good game against New England, you worry about the tight end depth now that Martellus has left. But if Zach Miller stays healthy, you know, and we got a bunch of ands, line gives Cutler time. Zach Miller could have a wonderful year. He's never had that healthy year.
I think it's hilarious that, you know, we talk about, and this is probably every city talking about this. Well, if we stay healthy, I mean, health concerns are blanketed across the NFL.
Sure.
Every team deals with it. There's a solid starting player of pretty much every team at some point in the season that's going to get hurt. I don't know why. And if you ask some of the old-time journalists, they say, well, players aren't the way they used to be, and they're not tough, and they don't hit enough in the preseason. But whatever the reasoning, players just end up getting hurt.
Yeah, and also, like, you know, you saw Belichick, how quickly. Once Gronk got hurt in the scrimmage against the Bears, you saw
yanked
how
him.
Quick he just took him out of there, pulled
Boom.
Him, yanked him. And J.J. Watt, I mean, with J.J. Watt, Houston's going to be real tough for the Bears. J.J. Watt doesn't play? Hey, that's anybody's ballgame. So I hope Jeremy Langford, whether or not, we were talking about whether or not during the break, if he's a featured NFL back, I do think he's the best back on the Bears, and with him in a walking boot, then now you got Kadeem Carey moving up, you got Howard moving up,
Jaquizz Rodgers.
Yeah. Not good.
Can you spell Jaquizz?
I could, yes. Are you asking me to do it?
Yeah, can you do it?
I just told you I could.
Can you do it? I don't think you can do it.
J-A-Q-U.
No.
Come on.
You can't spell Jaquizz?
Can you spell?
Dan, can you spell? I want to see if Dan Long can spell it, who's producing our show. Dan, can you spell Jaquizz?
Okay, because now Harry's attempt threw me off. I'm going to go J apostrophe A Q U.
No, that's creative, but you're wrong.
I-Z-Z.
You're thinking like Jamarcus Russell?
That it's J-A-C-Q-U-I-Z-Z.
Oh, damn.
It's one of those biblical names.
Yeah, and Cubs got a couple of tough ones now. Can you spell the kid that pitched last night? Striz?
Is this Strizny?
Yeah.
Is it Z-A-S-T-R-Y-Z-N-Y?
I think he might have just spelled that correctly.
Look at my last name. I should be able to spell anything.
Yeah, but yours is not. I mean, yours is Chicago last name. And, you know, that the one you just spelled is pretty strong, Sam.
I did win the spelling bee in third and fourth grade. I lost in fifth grade. I spelled rhubarb wrong.
Rhubarb?
I still can't spell it. There's an H in there. There's a silent
right,
H.
R-H. Right.
All right, smart guy.
I mean, that's like, I understand why you wouldn't get a hard one. Rhubarb's a layup.
In fifth grade, rhubarb is not a layup. I didn't even know what rhubarb was.
It's like a baseball fight. Oh, there's a rhubarb on the field.
So this Bears thing, Adam says, you know, control your expectations and remember that this is still the upswing. It's hard not to look at the John Fox teams of past with the Panthers and the jump from year one to two. It's hard to ignore that. Now, when you do it once, maybe you got lucky. You caught lightning in a bottle. When you do it twice, my eyes are peeled to that. And I do expect improvement. I do expect the team to probably win eight games. I think eight's fair. Last year they won six. This year, if they're healthy, they can win eight or nine. Certainly.
You know, the NFL also invites somebody to go from worst to first. It happens all the time.
It happened in the NFC South 4 years in a row.
It happened in the league like 8 years in a row. Somebody who has no business winning a division wins a division. We're not talking about like just going to the playoffs as a wild card. We're talking about winning a division. Somebody goes from worst to first. It's the nature of the NFL. It's the parity. Carolina was awful the year before, and they went to the Super Bowl last year. There's going to be some team, you know, it'd be great if it were the Bears, but the Bears are in a very tough division. I feel like Detroit has, you know, they lost their best player, but they're still a pretty good team. The Vikings are a very, very good team.
See, that's the sexy team that everybody's talking about, and I still can't wrap my hands around Teddy Bridgewater.
Teddy Bridgewater's good.
I don't think so. I disagree.
Teddy throws the belt?
Was it the performance when they had 10 points in the playoffs? Was that the one that sold it for you?
Well, how many did Seattle have that day?
It was 12-10. That was,
right, it was a bitter cold day.
Ice bowl style football.
Right, it was not a field that was conducive to filling up the scoreboard. That is a team that has a solid defense, a great coach in Mike Zimmer, Chicago kid, and I like Teddy Throsevelt. As long as you got Purple Jesus.
Teddy Throsevelt,
yeah.
And Purple Jesus?
Yeah.
That's Peterson, right?
Yeah, come on, you know, Purple Jesus.
I wasn't sure.
If you got Purple Jesus in your backfield, you got a very good chance to win.
And they've got another Chicago kid who played his high school ball at Crete, Laquan Treadwell.
Right.
Who was
the first
an All-American at Ole Miss.
Yeah, he's a great receiver. And he could theoretically do good things for the Vikings.
Mike Wallace, you've got?
Mike Wallace, still there. Still there.
And he can run one route. It's the go route. Just run straight.
And he goes. But the Vikings have a very good team, very good defense. I mean, they could have won that game in Arizona last year. That's a team that can go places. So the Bears clearly seem to be the fourth best team in the NFC. I won't even mention the other team. But the Bears clearly seem to be the fourth best team in the NFC North, yet because, as you mentioned, Fox has twice before had a huge movement going from year one to year two, you think, hey, maybe the Bears could get better. It's got to start with the offensive line. That's exactly where it starts.
Both lines. I'll even raise it to both lines. Trench play on both sides. Protect your running backs and quarterback, and then put pressure on the quarterback, because those freshman years, when they just completely ignored the defensive line and thought, you know, we don't need to get pass rushers because it will all work itself out. You get a pass rush up front, the holes become bigger for the linebackers to clog, and then it makes life on the secondary that much easier.
I feel so much better, though, about the Bears' defensive line. With Adam Hoge, who knows the Bears, with Adam Hoge, who hosts this show, who's Bears Insider here, you know, he points out, and rightly so, that Eddie Goldman is, you know, so good that the Bears didn't worry about, like, going after backups, other people for that position. Akeem Hicks has been the star of training camp, the defensive end they got from New England. And you're hoping Jonathan Boward, the Florida Gator, can come on and, you know, unseat Mitch Unrein. Then you've got Houston and Young, who've been playing very well as outside linebackers. Then you sign Freeman, Danny Trevathan, the two inside linebackers from the Colts and the Broncos, respectively. I'm feeling pretty good about that defensive line, about that front seven. Whereas the Bears' offensive line, I'm not so sure what we've got. We've got a veteran who was out there who's now your starting center. We've got a rookie offensive guard, and I'm hoping that Whitehair is going to be terrific. But
you miss Matt Slauson?
Boy, they just gave him up, didn't they?
Just let him go.
Phillip Rivers was happy they gave him up. So, I mean, you got Leno and you got Massey, and, you know, Leno, is he doing it with mirrors, or is he really, you know, a good tackle? I just don't know. And you got Larson now as your center with the injury to Grasso. You got Kyle Long, who's one of the best guards that there is in the NFL, but then you got Whitehair, who's a rookie. So I just don't know about the offensive line.
Yeah, that's fair. But you can notice the direction and the trend. The arrow's going up for the trenches. Like that's what Ryan Pace has addressed. He started on defense. He loaded up guys in the front seven, and he's starting to, and he thought that, you know, Grasso was going to have a big – did you see Grasso? Have you seen him before the injury? He was 300 pounds, and he was looking mean.
Yeah, oh, he's
– he got in shape. He was looking big and bad, and it's unfortunate anytime you see a guy go down with a knee injury in any sport. It's just it's really unfortunate. But they have
unless it's a Packer.
Well, I'll let you say that. By the way, I'm being told that Mike Wallace is now a Baltimore Raven.
Well, that's a good place for him.
Well, you just go from one purple team to the next. So they have Mike Wallace and Steve Smith.
They're not still not old enough. They can get older at receiver.
And they have the best play caller in the game.
Oh, Mark Trestman.
Yeah. What could possibly go wrong?
Nothing. Nothing. Nothing goes wrong for them. They stopped the game in Baltimore the other night. It's a preseason game, but they stopped the game in Baltimore so they could all watch the Michael Phelps race, which is cool.
He's from the Maryland area.
Right. I don't know if they stopped the University of Florida game when Ryan Lochte faked the armed robbery thing or not.
Somebody texting in from the 779. I don't know where 779 is. That is not an Illinois area code. I thought Purple Jesus was vodka and grape juice.
We could try.
We could
try that.
Did you see the note, by the way? They took the year 2007 from January through December, University of Florida, Gainesville. Uh-huh. Here's the roster of athletes there at that time.
I know three of them.
Go ahead.
You have Aaron Hernandez, right?
Yes.
Then you
bad dude.
Bad dude. See, his lawyer didn't remember his name in court. That's not good. Okay, you had Aaron Hernandez. You had the Eagles guy, Riley Cooper. Riley Cooper from the Eagles, who has said some awful things, racial implications. Tim Tebow?
Tebow
was there.
Keep going. There's about three more that are notable.
Ryan Lochte. Who, that's a pretty good foursome to start with.
Yeah, and it only took you about 30 seconds.
Oh, I'm sorry. Usually 30 seconds is good for me.
Well, there we go. I was waiting for the first one.
Mm-hmm. Who else am I missing?
Joakim Noah.
Oh, Joakim! Love Joakim. It's so weird. He's a Nick. And?
Cam Newton.
Because Cam Newton was a Gator.
He was a backup to Tim Tebow.
That is so bizarre.
That is a laundry list of really good athletes. Aaron Hernandez, Riley Cooper, Tim Tebow, Ryan Lochte, Cam Newton, Joakim Noah.
And some of those guys have something in common. But, you know, Lochte, Riley Cooper, Aaron Hernandez.
Had the cuffs on him?
Yeah. Well, have
they
done
call them
bad
steel
things.
Bracelets if you want to dress it up. They're steel bracelets.
Steel bracelets. As Ed Farmer would say, they're spending the night in the Gray Bar Hotel. You know, it's kind of crazy what Cam Newton's father is accused of. And there's no proof. It's never been proven, but
he was lobbying his son for cash,
right? And supposedly he got a great deal of cash from.
Didn't they ask for 200 large?
I'm not sure what
that was
asked.
The alleged report that they had asked for. I think it was 200,000, and then somebody had reported that they got half of that.
I have a friend, Don Davis. Don and I used to take a college trip every year. And we would go to some college, and I love college football. And we've been to like Alabama and Florida and Texas A&M, and we got to go to Auburn the year that Cam Newton played. And Cam Newton, they're playing LSU when they had a Honey Badger. And they were both undefeated when we saw him play. And every single time out, Cam Newton was running around that field, getting his teammates psyched, getting the fans psyched. I've never seen a player who was so involved during the timeouts with just keeping the crowd involved. I hate, one of the things I hate as a lifelong sports fan is the fanometer. And the Bulls do it. And I love the Bulls, but stop with the fanometer.
When the White Sox do it, and there's, you know, 20,000 people, and it still gets to 7 because it goes 1 to 10, right? And like 9 to 10 are, mm-hmm. are red, like that's as loud as it gets, and it gets to about 7, and you're like, there's no way it's a 7 out of 10 in loudness. I agree, that is stupid. I also don't like the kiss cam. I think the kiss cam is overplayed.
Kiss cam could be fun because they
no,
because
then you get the poor sap who's like bringing, you know, the girl that, you know, it's their first date.
So what? So just kiss her.
But she doesn't want. I you
kiss
know,
her
you
already.
Know how many denied kisses I've seen on the kiss cam.
I know, but it's, and then one guy had it like planned where like she denied him, and then at a Knicks game last year
she kissed the other guy.
Kissed the other guy. Which happened to me a couple times.
I'm
but
sorry.
That's all right. But
don't kiss, hold on to those memories.
Kiss cam is fun, though, because they show old people. They show,
oh,
you know,
yeah, there's nothing like old people making out.
Well, it's nice they can use their teeth.
Oh, jeez.
But kiss cam is fun. I don't like it when the stadium tells you when to be a fan.
Get
the,
loud.
The worst is...
Make some noise!
The worst is American Airlines Arena in Miami. The Heat, when the Bulls were playing the Heat, you got the games in Chicago where Bulls fans are awesome and they're so intense.
In Miami, they come in the third quarter.
Miami, they got like a little mariachi band playing and they, you know, they've got... They've got like an announcer telling you, okay, now we're going to stand and cheer. Give me a break.
And they wouldn't even be in there at tip-off. Right. They would stroll in through the first half.
And they left. They left. The game when Ray Allen hit the three-pointer to beat San Antonio, they left. But Gloria Estefan's husband is like the guy in charge of the band. Let's keep it.
We just went around the world and more.
Sorry about that.
We'll talk to Teddy Greenstein in Rio. That's coming up. Also, Brett Taylor from Bleacher Nation to talk some Cub baseball. All that coming up in the 6 o'clock hour. We're with you until 7, 720 WGN. WGN Radio, WGNRadio.com. Sam Panionovich and Harry Tynowitz with you until 7 o'clock. The best part about the window scene here on Michigan Avenue mm-hmm. is that we can see things changing on the fly. And it just went from sunshine and rainbows and everybody walking around, and now it's pouring rain and the umbrellas come out and people start running for cover.
Right. It was a beautiful day, and now we have a downpour.
Yeah.
Yeah, it went from, like, you know... It went from like some beautiful movie to Forrest Gump. It was raining sideways.
It was raining. It is raining sideways right now. And who knows? Maybe the Aaron Waters show will be affected. Maybe it actually has already started. I'm not really all that sure. We've been in a box for the last 3 hours, so it's tough to.
Been in the zone.
Yeah, been in the zone, bro. We're going to talk to Teddy Greenstein, hopefully after 6:30, about the Rio Olympics. Did you catch, by the way, the hottest ticket in Mealtown down in Rio? The food that everybody wants? You would think it would be some ethnic food or maybe some nice steakhouse. No,
right.
No.
They had a big story about it in the Tribune the other day. Mickey D's.
McDonald's. Free McDonald's for every athlete, coach, trainer.
And I'm going to say athletes probably eat less McDonald's than you and I do.
Probably.
So not only do they have access to this McDonald's, but many of them have finished their events, and it's free. I mean, how much McDonald's could you eat? And then how much McDonald's could you eat if it were free?
The lines have been reported 35 minutes for a Big Mac and a Coke.
Fastest people in the world standing there for 35 minutes.
Well, no, what it is, and
waiting.
The story was in Time Magazine, and if you missed it, Olympic athletes can't stop eating McDonald's. What it is they've gotten more and more busy every day because the events are done.
Yeah.
So these people that have been training for literally years, they win their race, they lose their race, whatever. Some go to the bar, get a purple Jesus. Some go and get a 20-piece nugget.
Do they have horses there? Yeah. Like, do the equestrian riders get to bring their horses?
There's
there?
A little window, like, under the door
like a doggy door? Yeah, like a horsey door?
A horsey door.
That's cool. I think that, like, you know, athletes, I mean, it's like, you know, it's like when you have training camp. You know, you have to get in shape. So not only are they in shape, but then they're there getting ready to compete. You know, it's the ultimate challenge. They've been training. Now they go. The whole world descends upon Rio. And as soon as it's done.
Unsaturated fat, get in me.
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah. I mean, talk about your carb downloading. It's right there.
It is all over the place. And that McDonald's has been the biggest food hotbed in Rio.
And is it an actual McDonald's? It's just like they set up a mash unit.
It's like when the carnival comes to town and they set up and then you just pack up the truck and go on to the next town.
A McDonald's carnival. How great is that?
How about that? 720 WGN.
Now back to the beat.
720 WGN. Very fitting, festive music bringing us back. Hour number four of the beat, 720 WGN. Sam Panionovic, Harry Tynowitz with you until 7 o'clock. And we talked a lot about the Olympics HT throughout the show and all the happenings, the Lochtes and the Phelpses and the Bolts and the McDonald's and the guns and the Olympic sex marathons and all that. But we didn't really go to the scene yet. We haven't done that yet. Oh. I feel like that's the next move.
Oh, well, you got the right guy to go there. This guy paints a picture in the Tribune every day for you about what's going on in Rio. He's in the middle of those marathons and in the middle of that free McDonald's.
Teddy Greenstein joins us now from Rio. Have you been to the McDonald's? That's the most important question. Let's start there. Have you been to this cathedral McDonald's that has 35-minute waits, Teddy?
Oh, did you say sex marathon, by the way?
Yeah, that was...
I thought we were going to start there.
We can go there if you prefer to go with sex over burgers early.
I think that's where we left off.
Yeah, just take it wherever you want, Teddy. Go ahead.
Well, I am curious to hear about the sex marathon. Unfortunately, I've definitely not been a part of that. And even worse, I've not had any McDonald's here. So for 40 years, they had McDonald's in the media village. And all right. And by the way, we're reacting to, what was that, Germany just went in the shootout? Or Brazil just went in the shootout? Anyway, very exciting times here. So there was always McDonald's, but this year, no McDonald's. And, it's been painful for me because I actually love all that stuff. So I got to figure out where you're talking about with this 35-minute wait, because that's like the normal wait just for anything around here. So that's not even that long.
So the story that I was hinting at, there's a pair of Brazilian teammates that one of them was water. Actually, they might both be water polo players, both of them girls. Uh-huh. The one locked the other one out of the room for like 6 hours so they could have a, quote, sex marathon.
And, wow.
The living arrangements have since been altered, as you can imagine, because being locked out of your dorm room in Rio is probably the most terrifying thing ever.
By the way, you've heard no cheering in the press box. Well, this is the sound of what happens when Brazil wins gold in the Olympics and just beats Germany. So the staff here are quite excited. Well, that sounds awesome. There's a lot of thrilling moments in the Olympics. This is my first one, and I've gotten to see Usain Bolt, and I got to see Phelps. I got to see little Simone Biles. I've done a lot of the smaller stuff like table tennis and badminton. I was hoping to make it out to this football match tonight, but I was covering the dominance of women's hoops. So it's been awesome, and these people are really happy to see Brazil win.
T. Green, can you compare Michael Phelps to Usain Bolt?
I can, and I did. You know, Harry, to me, it's no contest. You know, I went to swimming and was underwhelmed, to be honest. To me, swimming is much better on TV. I like those underwater camera views. you know, I like to see that zip line camera that just goes along with them as they're racing.
Yeah, right.
See who's in the lead. I mean, where I was like, I just see like a bunch of heads bobbing and I don't even know who's who. And now when you go to Usain Bolt, you know where he is before the race, after the race, during the race. He puts on an amazing show. If he hadn't won, even if he'd lost to an American, I would have felt like I got ripped off. I need my money back. The sounds in the arena are incredible. The silence, you know, the moment the gun goes off. And then as soon as Bolt wins, you turn to the guy next to you and you just high five him because you're that happy to have seen that the fastest man alive go do his thing.
Was it your tweet I saw? I think you were comparing one of the facilities or arenas to Wrigley because you had an obstructed view with like a post right in front of you or something like that.
You're very close on that, exactly. So the first day I went out to a beach volleyball at Copacabana, and that is, you know, the iconic sport. The two sports that Brazil cares about the most are soccer and volleyball, and beach volleyball, good Lord, it is as awesome as you can imagine to be around those talented women. that venue reminded me of Wrigley. Now, the obstructed views are in the swimming arena, where in the corners they put these ginormous barriers, so there are entire sections that can't be used. So, yeah, kind of a combination there of those two.
Teddy, I was very lucky. I got to go 20 years ago when it was in Atlanta, and I was so psyched I had tickets for the Dream Team. But I preferred boxing and diving and indoor volleyball because the basketball games were – there was, like, no doubt America was going to win. Is that the case for you? I know you wrote today in the Tribune about, you know, the USA you know, the way that they are heading towards this gold medal. Is that the case for you?
Harry, couldn't agree more. Honestly, the two least exhilarating days here have been the last two, have been the men's kind of strange, a little dull victory yesterday over Spain to get to the gold medal. And then, you know, the women's basketball team is just, it's just not fair. I mean, if you took half the players off their team, you know, that team would win the silver. I mean, they're just so dominant. So I cover, as you know, a lot of NBA, a lot of basketball in my regular life. So the joy for me coming here is the weird stuff. I mean, going to team handball and, you know, talking to the Dutch women who win in badminton. That's the fun stuff for me.
Teddy Greenstein with us live from Rio from the Chicago Tribune, the great sports writer on 720 WGN. A lot of people have lots of differing opinions about what the main storyline is from these Olympics. Usain Bolt, Simone Biles, Michael Phelps, the Ryan Lochte stuff off of the playing fields and off of the out of the pools. To you, when we look back at this Olympics, and this is your first one, when you look back four years from now, what will be 1A from the Rio Olympics?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. So, I mean, I just filed a column that's going to run tomorrow summarizing this whole thing. And honestly, the biggest takeaway for me is that these games were completely different than everyone predicted. I mean, you know, they say you're going to be kidnapped. I mean, they gave me a GPS sensor to wrap around my ankle in case I got taken somewhere and they didn't know where I was. You know, it's going to be the Zika virus. It was going to be, you know, poop-infested waters. I mean, they made it sound like we were coming to an absolute hellhole, and it's been delightful. It has not been without its problems. Traffic is a complete mess here. You know, the food is not exactly plentiful. You probably don't want to walk around a favela at night, you know, with your iPhone out. But the people here are sensational. So much of this has been, you know, an Olympics that was totally unlike what we all feared. And then in terms of the athlete performance, you know, Bolt, Phelps, Ledecky, the golf was amazing. Everybody thought the golf was going to be a dud, and it was great. And then, you know, I summarized my column by saying the good, the bad, and the Lochte, because that idiot, you know, soaked up 4 or 5 days here when it should have been going to people who were accomplishing stuff.
You know, the golf, you know, Justin Rose was just fantastic. And, you know, to see all those great golfers out there was great. But there's so many golfers that didn't show up. They gave excuses that just seemed like excuses. Do you think that any of those golfers regret, now that they saw what it was, do you think there's any regrets from the golfers that did not make it to Rio?
Absolutely. I mean, especially Jordan Spieth. You know, by the time Jordan Spieth said no, most people realized that Zika was going to be worse in Florida than it was going to be in Rio. I mean, it's the winter here, and I literally have not seen a mosquito. So that was ridiculous. Now, I don't know if it was, you know, a scheduling issue or, you know, he was worried that something was going to happen in terms of a kidnapping. Whatever advice he got was dead freaking wrong. There's no question about it. So, you know, early on in the summer, I understand there were some Zika concerns. I don't know what goes on in Dustin Johnson's, you know, kind of feeble mind. Rory McIlroy and Adam Scott, I think, just don't really believe that golf should be in the Olympics because there's already a Ryder Cup and a President's Cup. But Spieth, I know, wants a mulligan on that decision.
What will you miss the most of these three? Traffic, delicacy, or Portuguese television?
I thought you were going to ask about the sex marathon again.
Well, you didn't know about it, so I can't go there. I was hoping to go there, but I can't imagine what it's like to try and turn on television, you know, late at night after a long day, and you don't understand a single word.
Well, you know, what's funny about it is, I mean, if you turn on a sporting event that Brazil is involved in, you know, even though I don't understand a single word, I'm turning the volume up because when it's beach volleyball or soccer in Brazil does something good, the guy goes mental. They have a lot of Hawk Harrelsons out here who are very, very fired up about their team. So I'll miss a lot of it. It'll be phenomenal to come home in a couple of days, but I love the variety of stuff I've covered. It's been a treat.
Have you, but whether it's a broadcaster from, you know, NBC or from some other media outlet or celebrity, have you bumped into anybody fun, Teddy, while you're down there?
Well, this is kind of funny. I mentioned this guy tomorrow. I have a shadow here. There's a writer from Denmark named Soren, and wherever I go, he's right next to me for some reason. So, like, at the track, he's there. We're just randomly sitting together, and he's going mental whenever a record is broken. And then I see him, you know, smoking last night. He was just completely, I think, nervous because Denmark was playing in a team handball game. Like, media in other countries are unlike American media, where, you know, especially the writers, we're just hoping to make deadline. We want a good story to tell, and we want to make deadline. For the folks from the other countries, they are part of the team. And when the team wins, they are thrilled.
What's your favorite moment that you've had that you weren't on the clock for? Anything like a good restaurant or a celebrity sighting? Anything that, when you weren't on the clock and typing or writing, what was your favorite part about Rio?
Yeah, you know, I went to a midnight beach volleyball match. I saw USA Brazil. And the key is, if you go to beach volleyball, you're in Copacabana, and that's the place you want to be, because where we are right now is Baja, and it's kind of like sanitized and safe and convenient, but not fun. It's not very lively here. So you go to Copa, you get a great dinner, you have some beer, and then you are at this unbelievable venue. And the Brazilian fans they can be a little nasty while the Americans are serving. They're whistling and hissing. And I tweeted out a picture of this wacko behind me who was, you know, just going crazy at every point. But things like that are spectacular, just to be able to be a fan. And I'll be doing that tomorrow, going to the team handball final just for laughs.
Now, are you going to go into your editor's office when you get back and say, hey, I've got to be at the Winter Olympics in 2018?
South Korea, get ready.
I know, man. It's certainly crossed my mind. I mean, it's a long time to be away from my girls, who are now 8 and 4. But if asked, I will be happy to serve for the Tribune or Tronc or Gannett or whoever I might be working for then.
Well, you have your own company by then. Just have your own newspaper. I mean, no big deal. You can get the funding for that. I know a couple guys.
You guys, you know, throw 10, 20 million and we'll make it happen.
Just make sure you don't go to North Korea.
I will not get lost, I promise.
Yeah, well, if Dennis Rodman will be there, he can show you around.
No doubt.
Teddy Greenstein, we appreciate your time. I know you're about to go get some dinner. Enjoy your last couple of days here. I'm sure it was a blast down in Rio, and we really appreciate your time here. Welcome back in a couple of days whenever we see you.
Enjoyed it a ton, guys. Talk to you soon. Take care.
Thanks, T. Green.
You got it, pal.
Teddy Greenstein from the Chicago Tribune. Did not know about the Olympic sex marathon, but I'm glad that we caught him up to speed on that.
Yeah, now he knows. And now he will tell, because he's
he will tell
in that
his stalker.
World.
No, he will tell his little...
Doran? What, the guy?
Soren? I wasn't...
Strilax?
Yeah. No, that's a DJ, Harry.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. But no, it's good to have Teddy out, and he doesn't stop moving. He even goes to these events when he's not working, which I think tells you that the competition just kind of sucks you in, because I asked him what was his favorite thing when he wasn't working, And he said it was a USA-Brazil volleyball match. So,
you know, it's I was very lucky. I've been very lucky to where I've gotten to go in radio. And I got to go to the 96 games in Atlanta. And it is like, it's just a party. I mean, you don't sleep because you leave an event to get to another event, and there's just people singing and dancing on the street, and you're hugging everybody. And even when you're waiting in a restaurant, everybody's talking to everybody. Everybody is, it's like the one trip people have saved up for their whole lives, and they're just so happy to be there. So there's, you know, not only is it like athletes from all over the world, but it's people from all the world that are just sports fans, and it's really cool. Sounds like Teddy's, you know, was the perfect guy to send over there amongst the many people the trip sent.
We've learned two things about you that we didn't already know. You go from party to party to party, and you also go from event to event to event. Just so you know, that's been disclosed by you over the course of the show. I'm waiting for the hook.
I'll give you the hook.
Here we go. Why did we make you wait for about 40 seconds? Because the Blackhawks just lost the Jimmy Vesey sweepstakes. Talented player.
I see what you did there.
Out of Harvard. He was the player of the year last season in the NCAA. He chose the New York Rangers and his old buddies, the Hayes brothers, who he grew up with. And I'm sure we're telling him that hey, the Blackhawks might let you down. Anyways, Blackhawks finished second, third, fourth, whatever. They didn't land Jimmy Vesey.
Yeah, and Jimmy Vesey, you know, for those of you, we assume Blackhawk fans that a lot of you guys know, but the Heisman Trophy in hockey is the Hobie Baker Award, and he is the reigning Hobie Baker Award winner. He's awesome. He scored, averaged more than a point a game at Harvard, and he didn't sign with the Predators when they drafted him. There were like five teams courting him. Petra Kane flew to his, you know, neighborhood to have dinner with him.
It's a big deal.
It is a big deal. The MVP is Petra Kane, for God's sake. But the Rangers had, the team he signed with, they had like Noah Syndergaard from the Mets, Justin Tuck from the Giants. They had the guy, Daryl McDaniel from Run DMC.
I know Derrick Rose wasn't there recruiting.
No, Derrick Rose, please. He's got to stay healthy for his kid's graduation
in
14 years.
That's what I've been told.
But this would have been great. And they part of the presentation was you're going to, you know, skate on a line with, you know, Kane or with Taves. And Jimmy Vesey is now property of the Blue Shirts.
Yeah, so that was something, you know, Stan Bowman was planning on it because it's not a lot of money. It would have been a two-year contract, lots of incentives built in, kind of like the Artemi Panarin deal.
Oh.
And, you know, Blackhawk fans might not like it, but I know the hockey world is happy that the Blackhawks didn't get Jimmy Vesey because it would have just been the rich getting richer.
Yeah, which is okay with us.
Well, right. And because that's what we hope. That's what we're used to. We're used to getting the guys.
You're going
to
have a lot of young guys playing on the Blackhawks
yes,
this year, at
especially
forward.
In forwards.
Right, lot of young guys. I like Tanner Kuro, American Kuro.
I like Kenan Stroza.
Kenan Stroza is good. And where can I hear every Blackhawk game, home and away? Sam?
You can hear it on the home of the Blackhawks, 720 WGN, or WGNRadio.com, or the WGN Radio app. I can't wait for John and Troy and Judd. I can't wait to get the band back together.
That's awesome.
And little Ziggy, Paul Zerang.
Paul Zerang.
Paul Zerang, the man behind the dials. Danny Long works for Blackhawks Radio, too. Did you know that?
I'm a big fan, Dan.
Yeah, me too.
I love me some Blackhawks Radio. Blackhawks have some cool surprises planned for the fans this year. Edge of the Bulls, and that building is going up awfully fast across from the United Center.
We will keep you posted. Training camp. Less than a month away. Hawks are coming. 720 WGN. 25 minutes left to go on the Saturday edition of The Beat, 720 WGN, WGNradio.com. Sam Panionovich and Harry Tynowitz. Jeff Carlin is coming up next. He's hosting with Eric Zorn, the Mincing Rascals, taking over WGN's Saturday Night Special. Scott Stantis will make an appearance as well. Jeff is texting me live updates, by the way. I wanted to read this text before we get to Brett Taylor for Bleacher Nation. We were talking about the favorite moments or the favorite sports that listeners had from the Olympics.
Right, because even though we wanted to see Michael Phelps and Usain Bolt, there's so many other sports that like, kind of catch you by surprise how into them you get.
So we got this text. This is from the 312. It's actually four texts into one. My name is Marv. Olympics are too boring. The U.S. are not an underdog anymore. We win at pretty much everything. We don't have a country to hate or that we are at war with. Rocky IV was awesome, but it also ended the Cold War. So at its core, Rocky IV made the Olympics boring. Since video gaming is considered a sport now, why don't we bring in a new style of athlete like beer pong or quarters? Seriously, how funny would it be to see some Argentinian frat boy destroy some frat boys from Arizona State? So that's a hot take right there.
Some would say Rocky IV was kind of boring. I must break you.
That's one of my favorite theories of all time, that Rocky IV actually
ended
the Cold
War.
Yeah.
Well, now you know.
Well, you can't prove it one way or the other, but we can believe it for the next 25 minutes. Why not? So in the most difficult transition of the show, we now move to...
it's not difficult. You can do it. You're a pro.
Cubs baseball, which is underway in about a half an hour from now. The Cubs lost last night. I still think it's hilarious fashion. Harry disagrees with me. We'll bring in Brett Taylor from Bleacher Nation, at Bleacher Nation on Twitter and BleacherNation.com. Hey, Brett, how are you?
I'm doing good. You know, it didn't have to be a tough transition. We can keep going on beer pong if you guys want to get into that.
See? See, I like it, Brett. Well, you're ready to roll.
That's a guest that knows everything and can jump into any situation. Now, I sort of hinted at it, and I talked about this earlier, Brett, about how in a long baseball season where there's ups and downs, the Cubs are 33 games over 500. Still, though, I couldn't help but laugh at the way that that baseball game ended last night, where the guy that you took out of the lineup, Jason Hayward, can't make the play in right field because he's not on the field, and then one of your better fielders throws the ball into the dugout and the Cubs lose on an error. I thought that, to me, if you can't laugh at that, then you're doing something wrong.
Well, and especially with 33 games above 500, you might as well just chuckle about those or just tell yourself that it's just one of those ridiculous things that happens in baseball, or you're just going to tear your hair out. Because if you can't get over that, then, man, if and when the Cubs are ever in a tight race or, God forbid, a tight playoff series, you're just not going to survive.
Well, Brett, obviously you're not going to win every game, but what was frustrating for me is the weak spot was the bullpen. The bullpen was addressed in a big way, trading one of the great, you know, minor league prospects to get Aroldis Chapman, and this is the second save. He's blown already, gave up a hit, and then that ball in a lot of other parks would have been a homer, but it got crushed off the wall. So I was just not loving, you know, the Chapman, you know, being, you know, gotten to give up the save.
Yeah, and it also really sticks out because, obviously, the Cubs' bullpen is in a state of flux right now. Some injury issues, I imagine we'll get into that also. But, you know, Chapman's supposed to be the guy you hang your hat on and you say, well, everything else maybe is in flux, but when he comes into the game, it's over. And, yeah, he did not look very good last night, but he's been leaned on really heavily, especially in the last week. And I wonder if he's just a little worn down. Guys go through those times, and maybe he needs a breather or two. And, you know, it's tough because when relievers come in, it's all entirely small sample. You make one crummy pitch, which it was a really bad pitch, and it gets crushed and you blow the save in part because your otherwise fantastic second baseman throws the ball away. So it's hard for me to be too worried just from that, but I certainly understand why, when considering everything, it might be a little extra frustrating to see it play out the way it did.
I'm not the type of person, Brett, that second guesses managers, especially after the fact, but I was adamant about it at the time on Tuesday when Aroldis Chapman had pitched in game one of that doubleheader against the Brewers, threw about 25, 30 pitches, and then Joe Maddon brings him in again in game two. They're up 4-0. There's a couple runners on. I mean, you're overworking this guy who is supposed to be preserved. That's your pristine arm for the playoffs. It doesn't matter if you blow a game two of a doubleheader against the Brewers. That doesn't matter. This team is going to the playoffs, and with a bullpen that's already, like you said, banged up, you've got some guys on the shelf, you've got some guys dealing with some injuries. Chapman's the one piece that just, you can't overwork that guy in August. We still have another month of the regular season.
Yeah, it'll feel like the worst kind of hindsight because of what happened last night, but I'm right there with you. I have not loved the way he's been used this week. On the one hand, you bring a guy in who's a rental. He's going to be a free agent at the end of the year, and he is kind of a mercenary in the sense that you want to use him up. You know, you don't want to hurt the guy, but you want to get your sort of value out of him.
Five appearances in 6 days, Brett.
Yeah, yeah. The other hand is if you push it too far, too hard, you might not have him when it matters most, which, of course, is at the end of next month. So I think probably we're going to see maybe the pedal off the ground a little bit on him and might not see him the rest of this weekend, and hopefully he gets a chance to reset.
Brett, you mentioned Javi Baez, my favorite player on the Cubs. This guy, if he were playing enough, he could get a Gold Glove at second and a Gold Glove at third. I like Chris Bryant in left, giving you, you know, Zobrist and Russell and Javi Baez on the infield with Anthony Rizzo. Do you think Javi Baez needs to play more? Do you think he's doing a good job?
Well, I think for this year, I really like the way he's been handled this year, in part because he's been so good at it. I mean, like you said, he hasn't just been playable at second base and third base, and then occasionally filling in at shortstop, too. He's been fantastic. And that alone, that ability to transition so seamlessly on a day-to-day basis, is a skill that not a lot of players have. And so on a team like this, where the Cubs have so much flexibility in other positions where they can move guys around, and he's kind of the linchpin that accommodates all that, I really like the way they've used him. That said, there is a philosophy that a player's bat can develop even more in the long term if he really settles into a position and gets comfortable there. We might see that coming, you know, in the next 2-3 years for Javi Baez, because he's certainly going to be a starting caliber player. But for this year, I think, you know, he can do this for you, and you might as well take advantage while he can.
Brett Taylor's all over the Cubs at Bleacher Nation, bleachernation.com. He's on Twitter at Bleacher Nation with us now on WGN Radio. What do you make of the Jason Hayward situation? Because, you know, he obviously needs a mental break, a couple days off here and there. But Denver, namely Coors Field, is a place where a lot of hitters go to get right, if you follow my drift. You know, the guys hit some line drives that go over the wall. Maybe you get a home run or two in the series. I don't know how he's going to react to this, because we don't really know Jason Hayward that well, and we don't know if he's able to deal with adversity long term. I'm worried about a guy that's being paid a lot of money. I know he's good defensively. He can run bases. He's got a rocket for an arm. But he's got 5 home runs and 35 RBIs, and that's a guy you hope to count on in October.
It's a really tough situation, especially for the reason you mentioned. It's a new guy coming into a team with very serious playoff aspirations. He comes in on a big contract, and, of course, he does do all that other stuff exceptionally well. But, you know, he's not getting that huge payday if he's not been a consistently above-average hitter in his career. And he has not gone through a slump of this length and this depth in his career where, unfortunately, it's not even like it's a fluky thing. I mean, early on, a lot of people were quick to point and say, he's just been unlucky, he's hit the ball hard right at people. And unfortunately, you really dig in, and the sort of batted ball data doesn't really support that. It's just been bad. And I think I understand the thinking behind you give him this break. For me, because he has such a complicated swing, because we don't know exactly what changes the Cubs have been trying to work with him on, I fear we're not really going to see a true reset until the offseason, when they can really sort of dig back in on his mechanics. That's just too hard to do in season, and a 3-day break over the weekend I don't think is going to get it there. So I think it's almost as much about letting Jorge Soler and Matt Caesar, each of whom have been killing the ball, letting them get a few more starts, like you said, in a place where it's really nice to hit. So maybe you want the better bats in there anyway. But it's tough for Jason Hayward.
An embarrassment of riches. Okay, Brett, they had John Lackey and Hector Rondon go on the DL yesterday. Last Thursday, Pedro Strop had surgery. How worried should Cubs fans be about the health of this pitching staff?
Well, as long as everything is sort of at face value right now, I would say not very. because, you know, you've got Pedro Strop. He actually just put up a video to his Instagram of him jogging on a treadmill. I mean, dude just had knee surgery a week ago, and he's already jogging on a treadmill. You know, he's due back mid-September. Hector Rondon, you know, they've said, look, if this is end of September, he'd be pitching through this. So it might not be that serious. John Lackey, same kind of thing. So as long as we are looking at a team that those that first week or two of September, we're seeing these guys coming back, I think then we can really feel comfortable and confident that it was just the Cubs taking advantage of a huge lead in the NL Central to really make sure their guys are in a position to be at their peak for those last 2 weeks of September as you ramp up for the playoffs. So right now, again, everything we know, I'm feeling okay. But, you know, check again in 3 weeks.
You said the P word, playoffs, so let's go there. This is one of the most fascinating games to play because you can do it. This team is making the playoffs. I'm not buying this collapse. It's not going to happen. There are two tough decisions, though, Brett, and I want to see what you think about these two decisions. Which starter comes out of the rotation, and who's the surprising cut that doesn't make the playoff roster from the 25?
Oh, man. I mean, those are just brutally good questions because usually with most teams, it's not too hard to answer because it's really rare that you've got five starters that are all really, really going strong. It's really rare that you have such a full roster that, I mean, heck, we all saw with the Tommy La Stella situation that they've got a guy he's a big league caliber player and they couldn't even really fit him on the roster. So, you know, for the rotation, I think although he's been fantastic in the second half, best ERA in baseball in the second half, I think Jason Hamill right now would probably be the guy who gets moved to the bullpen for the playoffs. Which, you know, might not be the worst thing in the world because especially if some of these bullpen issues don't resolve themselves, maybe you want a guy like that coming out of the pen. As for the roster itself, you know, I think it's fair to at least ask, given that Wilson Contreras did just catch Jake Arrieta this week. Obviously not a great start for Jake Arrieta, but Contreras looked pretty good. I think it's at least fair to ask if there's a chance that maybe Miguel Montero ends up getting left off that playoff roster. It's tricky, too, because the roster resets at every round of the playoffs. So for that NLDS, you're just talking about five games. So it might be someone surprising that we're not even thinking of now just because of the way those five games line up.
Ding, 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 ding. You're Harry correct. I'm Miguel Montero. You're one of my pillow.
Harry said that's the guy. He said Montero's going to be the odd man out.
Well, let's see how he does tonight. Maybe he blows up in Colorado tonight and everybody changes their tune again.
Okay, so I'll text Miguel right now. If you hit two home runs, Brett Taylor says you'll make the playoff roster.
That's right. This is the game that decides it.
All righty. All right, on August 20th, most important day of your life. He's Brett Taylor from Bleacher Nation. He runs the ship over there at Bleacher Nation on Twitter and BleacherNation.com. Thanks, Brett. Enjoy your Saturday night.
Hey, likewise, guys. Thanks a lot for having me.
There he goes, Brett Taylor from Bleacher Nation. So he agrees with me on Hamill. He agrees with you on Montero.
Yeah, see, I would disagree with him on Hamill. I mean, the reason you got John Lackey is to pitch him in the playoffs, and as a rookie, he threw Game 7 when the Angels won the World Series.
He came out of the bullpen, didn't he? Oh, no,
he
started Game 7.
He started Game 7 as a rookie.
K-Rod was the guy out of the bullpen.
K-Rod.
Francisco Rodriguez.
57.
Yeah.
So even though John Lackey has been, you know, a big-time playoff pitcher, Jason Hamill's been hot, and I know last year his second half was horrible, but he's got 22 scoreless innings in a row now. If Jason Hamill stays like this, maybe Lackey's the guy that gets moved. Plus, Lackey's attitude, he was warming up in the bullpen twice in the last homestand.
Yeah, well, he's got to understand it, and that's a guy who Joe Maddon always says, it's tough to tell him what's up. It's tough to let him know the situation sometimes because he's so you know, stubborn. Some people call it red-assed. He's the old-fashioned Southern boy. So,
yeah, and Maddon was a coach on that team.
Angels.
Yeah, and that Angels team where Lackey was a rookie that won, you know, where they won Game 7.
He said it's tough sometimes to be a teammate, an umpire, even a manager with John Lackey. So those are the breaks. Good problems to have, though, that we're talking about which starter won't make the rotation and
hell
which
yeah.
guy will make the team. Cubs are going to the playoffs. You should be happy about it if you're a fan of the boys in blue. 720. WGN. Sand almost out of the hourglass on the beat. 720 WGN. Sam Panionovich, Harry Tynowitz, Mincing Rascals coming up next. Jeff Carlin, Eric Zorn, Scott Stantis. And it's been fun with you, HT. It's been fun hanging out with you for 4 hours.
It has been my pleasure, Sam. It's been just a riot. Nice to get back in the studio, and to be here without getting my back waxed is really a plus. But, you know, W grew up here in Chicago, so it's a great treat always to be on WGN.
We're happy to have you. Let's close out here before we do Crosstalk. There's always that that old saying, you know, right place, right time, wrong place, wrong time. One of the bus drivers in Rio had a tough time. Didn't he take the team to the wrong place?
Yeah, it's – I mean, I saw the story and I read it three times because it couldn't possibly have happened. But last weekend, they had to delay the women's swimming events. They had to push them back because the bus carrying the women's swimming team – instead of taking them to the swim arena, took them to track and field stadium.
Probably not very close location-wise.
No, it's not good. It's like, why are they getting their bus drivers from the CTA? It's just a bad idea.
Now, is that – does the team – I wonder, and these are the questions I think about, where was the team from? Do you remember?
Rio. It was the Spain. Oh, it was the local team.
Well, no. Brazil.
I'm sorry, Brazil. Brazil for Spain.
I'm going to say I've been on a different planet for 2 weeks. Yeah. So that's got to be a local bus driver.
It's got to be a local bus driver.
Because you're not going to hire a bus driver from Denmark to drive in Brazil.
Right. And you know, here's the thing. It's like, you know, it's possible that none of the athletes are from Rio. They could be from another part of Brazil. But, you know, I think they've been there for a couple weeks. But, you know, shouldn't someone... At some point say something, and like the bus driver has one job. He's taking the swim team to the swim arena.
Point A to point B.
How do you go from Olympic Village to, you know, take them to the wrong place, track and field? That'd be like Sunday morning. The buses pick up the Bears at the hotel, and instead of taking them to Soldier Field, they take them to the United Center.
One time my brother was driving me back to college down in Champaign.
Uh-huh.
And I was really tired. I'd been up. I was working. And he was going to drive me back down and stay the weekend. So Chicago to Champaign, drive south, right? We wake up. We're in Wisconsin. I wake up. I was in the passenger seat.
No. Wisconsin's north.
I said, where are we going? And he said, U of I. I said, no, we're not. We're an hour out of the way right now. We're an hour and a half. We're almost in Milwaukee.
How did he get?
He just got on the wrong. He hadn't ever driven a Champagne before.
Is this the brother that's in the White Sox system?
Yes. He doesn't drive. He doesn't drive Uber, so I think you don't worry about it. But this has happened to me where you're supposed to be in one place and you're way off the map.
Yeah. I mean, that's completely the wrong direction.
Yes.
One time I had MapQuested, two things. I had MapQuested a bar I was doing an appearance at, and I MapQuested like a golf course that we were going to be doing a show from.
Back in the day when you'd print the MapQuest out?
Yes.
And you read it?
Yes. Yeah. Sad. Back in the day, I admit it. And for some reason, I never threw the first one. Like, I used to bring the first one in and, like, file it, you know, and put the miles down and, you know, what day I went. And I didn't do it with this one. So I woke up in the morning. They both started the same way. Like, you know, go to 90 West. And so I'm driving, like, 45 minutes, 50 minutes. And I pull up, and I'm back at the golf course. No, I'm supposed to be at a bar right now.
No.
This is not good.
Oh, that's the worst.
So I feel for your brother. I could see how it could happen.
I will let him know. I'll pass it along. We will talk with the Mincing Rascals. That's coming up next on WGN.